Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesarino, and we have got a treat for you today because we are going to be speaking with the winner of Survivor 39. Mr. Tommy Sheehan is going to be joining us to talk about his run through Survivor 39. It's been a tradition on Rob as a podcast, and it started way back after the great Tony Vlachos, who's about to return to our TV. He, after season 28, felt like, hey, we weren't talking enough about his game and all the moves that he made. And of course, Steve and I had a lot of questions. And so we did the Tony's Sleepover podcast, not the oral history of the sleepover. And that was during the summer of 2014. And since then, I've spoken with every winner since about their games. And that's what we're going to do here with Tommy. So very excited for that coming up today. If you missed it last week, I had a deep dive with Nora, 3.5 hours with Nora the other day. Had a great time. It flew by talking with Nora. Check that out if you have a chance or are interested in that sort of thing. And the other thing that we've had going on here is we have been covering the new Netflix series, The Circle. And so go ahead and check out our podcast coverage. We've got episode recaps of episodes 1 through 4, including our big roundtable wrap up on Thursday Night Live, which you can watch the video as well. If you're keeping up with The Circle, we will have our week 2 coverage kicking off on Wednesday when the new episodes drop. Before we get to Tommy, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Credible. What's Credible? Well, Credible is an online marketplace that helps you get pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates for up to 10 different lenders. I know that a lot of our listeners have a lot of money outstanding in student loan debt, and Credible can help you save on your interest or lower your monthly payment. Sometimes both. You can consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. With Credible, you can see actual pre-qualified rates, whereas with some online marketplaces, you only get a range of rates or a ballpark estimates. It only takes a couple of minutes to check the rates. Just fill out some basic info like name and address. Also, checking your rates isn't going to impact your credit. They're so confident and credible that you're going to get the best rates that they'll give you $200 if you close a loan with a better rate elsewhere, and they never sell your data, so you won't receive spam or phone calls from dozens of lenders. So if you're interested in seeing if there is a way to save money on your student loan payments, visit credible.com/Rob. That's CREDIBLE.com/ROB. And when you close a loan with Credible, they'll give you a $200 gift card. Fill in a couple of pieces of information to check what rates are eligible for you. That's all at credible.com/Rob. Credible.com/Rob. Refinance and start saving. All right, I'm very excited to talk with this man who is here to talk about his 39-day winning run in Survivor Island of the Idols. Didn't have advantages, didn't have immunities, didn't visit Rob and Sandra, but he's here for a visit with Rob C. Here he is, Mr. Tommy Sheehan. Tommy, how are you?
What's going on, Rob? This is a dream come true. This is Tommy coming from his apartment live. So I'm so happy to be here. So happy to talk to you because, as everyone knows, I'm a super fan and I do listen to your podcast leading up to the game. So thank you for having me.
Okay, Tommy, since we saw you a couple of weeks ago, what have you been up to since the big win?
You know what it is? It's crazy. Everyone, like, as I do these podcasts and I do all these like interviews, everyone goes, are you going to go back to teaching? Mm-hmm. And of course I'm going back to teaching. So after I won,
win $2 million.
Yeah, exactly. Even I didn't win the $2 million. They saved that for after my win. They didn't want me to have that, clearly, production. So after I won, I flew back the next day and I went right back to work. So I'm back to teaching time with Tommy, lessons every single day with my students. And just right now I'm on December break. So I'll be going back to work Monday and I'm excited to see my kids and get back to real life teaching and what I love to do.
Do you mean that literally you won Survivor, you came back home and were at work the very next day?
Yeah, so it's crazy that could be. I was like, give me the earliest fight I can do. Obviously I won. I celebrated with all my friends from the season, and I got right back to work, and my school was so phenomenal with it. I came in, I didn't know. All my family was there. Mm-hmm. They had a red carpet for me, 900 students outside, all teachers with signs. That day was actually greater than my win. It was so cool to like walk down that red carpet and see these signs that said, you know, I'm so proud of you, Mr. Sheehan. I want to be like you. Follow your dreams. One kid had a sign, can I borrow $50,000? So I give him credit.
So this was after your win or after you played?
This was after I won. Oh, so okay. So I wasn't clear. So after I won.
I thought you were saying you got off the you went to Final Tribal Council, got on a plane, and then we're back at work the next day.
No, actually, that's a whole different story. So I proposed the day I got back. So sorry, I'm all over the place.
Oh, right wow. Now. Okay. Yeah. See, I didn't think I was going to have this issue with you. I thought this was going to be that just with Nora, we were going to bounce around. But no. Okay. So, let's start there. So you went to Final Tribal Council, came home, and proposed to your now fiance, Nicole.
Yeah. So what's cool about that is that like Jeff in production actually helped me out with my proposal. So before going on Survivor, I didn't know I was going to win. You know, I had this whole plan of proposing at loved one's visit. So I asked Nicole to come out. I did everything like that. But Nicole's kind of shy. And once I saw that there's 400 cameras at these challenges, that I shouldn't propose. Also at Final Eight, I knew I had a really good shot at winning. So I think proposing might have made me a bigger threat.
Yeah, I would not recommend that.
Yeah. So instantly I was like, you know what? Scratch that. So what Jeff actually did was he ended up, because we don't have our phones, he ended up calling Nicole and saying, Jeff in production. Jeff didn't personally make the call, but the production called Nicole and said, hey, Tommy's getting back April 1st. Can you pick him up from the airport at this time? And gave her a fake flight to track everything like that.
Because it was April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I guess so, right? And then May 30th, wow, I didn't even think of that. Wow. And then May 30th, they called my mom. They said, hey, can you pick up Tommy from the airport? Blah, 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 blah. So she picked me up from the airport. I actually met Nicole in my backyard at a family party. So I was in my backyard. My mom called Nicole and said, hey, can you come over to set up for when Tommy gets home from tomorrow? And then she walked in the backyard. There was the pictures from the day we met until the day right then and there. And, you know, as sweet as can be, I proposed to her right then. So Survivor is part of our life. She's a super fan. She was the one to pitch me to try out for this show. So I thought it was just a perfect timing, you know, kind of like a storybook ending of my journey.
Wow. Okay. And do you have a date yet set for the wedding?
Yeah. So it's not this May, it's May 2021, because I didn't want Survivor to take over like her spotlight. So mm-hmm. I wanted this to calm down and the wedding to be about her. So it's not this May, it's next May in Long Island. If you're around, Rob, you can come. Elaine's trying to be my best man, so we'll see. I'm going to have tryouts. But Dean, actually, DK Chillin might be the person to marry us.
So the officiant.
Yes, so he's a licensed officiant. So right now, it's looking like he might do it. So I think that'll be kind of fun.
Okay. All right. That would be wild.
Yes, DK Chillin, the officiant.
Okay. All right. And then just to go to the end of this journey. So you went back. I did see the pictures of this. You went back to your school. I think this must have been covered by the local news, because that I know my mom was saying, like, boy, they rolled out the red carpet for Tommy.
Yeah, I'm glad your mom still is watching the Long Island news. So that's good. She still has the Long Island heart. But yeah. So funny story, the local news contacted me right after my win. They're like, can we interview at this day? I was like, no, I have to go back to work.
News 12?
News 12 and the CBS affiliate. Yes. They hit me up like, can we interview the day you get back? And I was like, no, I have to go back to work. Then I'll do it. And then they ended up there. But my principal, she was awesome. And the PTA president was awesome. They had this like 60-foot long sign. Remember this. I won Wednesday at not like 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And they got this all done overnight. So when I came home, there's a 60-foot sign that said Teaching Time with Tommy. And there was winner.
No way that they might have been able to guess that you could have won.
Yeah, you know, like, I really didn't tell anybody, but I mean, as the edit showed,
maybe they read the edit.
Maybe they're all Reddit people. Maybe they're the ones calling me bored on Reddit. So maybe that's it. My school even thinks I'm boring, maybe. So they're on Reddit. So Dang it. Reddit ruins everything, I guess. Actually, what's funny is like I'm a Reddit like person. I've been on Reddit. So it's funny to like I haven't come out of hiding yet, but I love reading all these things. It's just fun. It doesn't hurt my feelings or anything like that.
OK, good to know.
But I came back and they had the red carpet and there was all those kids out. 900 kids were interviewing the kids. They had all these great signs out. And it literally I burst into tears. It hit me harder than the actual win when my parents ran on stage and my sister and stuff like that. So it was awesome to see how proud my kids were of me, my students.
All right. Well, let's talk about your journey here. You've talked a lot about being, you know, a big fan of the show. Can you just talk a little bit about your experience with Survivor prior to applying for the show?
Yeah. So Survivor was always my family's show. So no matter what, we had sports, you know, my dad and mom were like detectives and they worked all different times and they worked in the city. But Thursday, because it used to be on Thursdays, was the time that no matter what, no matter anything, we would have family dinner and watch Survivor. So I watched from Richard Hatch all the way up to Chris Underwood. And I still get to with my family every Wednesday now and watch with them. So it has such a big impact on me, like just more than a show. It was my family's show. So to be able to then get out there and play and win and have my family there was unbelievable. And like you saw, they tell the family members, do not run on stage. Yeah. Let the winner run out to you. That's where our cameras are set up. But once they said Tommy on the sixth vote, my dad was knocking over anybody in front of him to get up there with his mullet blown in the wind. So yeah. It was really cool
like
to get
a real
them there.
Character, your dad.
Oh, my God. He took over the show. They actually to get the families onto the studio, they had to get them on buses and things. And the handlers couldn't get everyone under control. So they asked my dad to take over. So my dad was directing everyone into the buses. He was getting there and everything like that. Yeah. If you want a character, you put my dad on the show. He's out of his mind in a good way.
Yeah. I was at the taping and I was going through the security line with Chelsea's parents. And they were like, have you seen Tommy's dad yet? I was like, you can't miss him. He's wearing the pink blazer.
Pink blazer, mullet. He's 6'5" with just a handlebar like mustache. And oh, man. But that's the reason I didn't bring him. He's my best friend. But I couldn't bring him on Loved Ones because I knew he would just be like, Jeff, come here. Give me a hug. Blah, blah, blah. And talk to everyone. I was like, Dad, blow up my game. So I was like, I cannot have him out there. I need my girlfriend who's quiet and, you know, reserved and not to blow up my game.
Tommy, I didn't know this about you. You said that both your parents were detectives.
Yeah, yeah. So they worked in the NYPD. So, yeah, they were police officers and worked their way up to detectives. And they did their 20 years and they got out. They worked 9/11 and everything like that. So when I was in fourth grade, now I'm a fourth grade teacher, was the time 9/11 happened. And I have such clear memories of my parents staying overnight there, me sleeping at my neighbor's house and, you know, and them doing that. So I give a lot of credit to my parents there. They're awesome human beings.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this about me, that my father was NYPD and he was 28 years in the police department, that he was a lieutenant and he retired actually right before all of that happened.
That's crazy. I'll text you. I don't know exactly what precinct I work for. I'll text it to you and we'll see if they watch them know each other. That'd be a fun small world.
All right. Well, so what made you finally say, okay, this is the time I'm going to apply for the show?
So my whole life has been like, I focus on one thing and I become obsessed with it until I can accomplish it. So it was graduating high school, being a, you know, a basketball player. Then I went to college and then it was to become a teacher. And then it was, okay, I did all that. I got tenured and I was like, let me now, I've always wanted to do this since I was 7 years old. I said, I am going to win Survivor. So my mom and my fiance now was like, do it, apply. Like, and contrary to different belief, like, you're out of your mind. You're the life of the party. You're crazy. Like, their casting's going to drool when you come into the doors. So I actually was like, okay, so let me put a video together. And it was like not during the casting time for Survivor. It was actually the casting time for Big Brother.
Okay.
So I was like, I don't want to do Big Brother. I need to come back and do my teaching job. So I want to do a G-rated show, not Big Brother with live feeds and stuff like that. I'm a Big Brother fan.
I don't want to be involved with anything controversial.
Oh, yeah, exactly. See where that led me, you know? Oh, my gosh. I guess I picked the wrong show. but, yeah, so I put a video together And I was like, all right, I just kind of talked to the camera, you know, told some, you know, stories, and like casting people say, don't say you're funny, be funny. Don't say you're athletic, show you're athletic. So I sent in a video to Big Brother with no intent of doing it. This is Big Brother 20 time. And that day I got a call and it was like, hey, I was at work. Hey, this is blank, blank, blank. I love your video. Call me back. Don't tell anyone I made this call. So I was like, oh my God, my video works. So then I turned to Nicole, my mom. I was like, should I just like not answer back? Should I just, cause I was only wanted Survivor. So they're like, no, go through the process, like learn, do like the semifinals, the finals and stuff like that. So then I was like, okay. So I did some phone call interviews, a Skype interview, and I was crushing it. And I was like, I just knew at the end, I was like, they're like, we'll let you know. I was like, no, they're going to say I'm good. Mm-hmm. And then semifinals, what they do is they flew out to New York to meet me. And I went to this hotel and I went up, they mic you up, there's cameras. And it's like, they have like 15 minute like segments, and they had me last because I was a teacher. And I was like, I need to work my day and I'll come there. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, it went for over 2 hours long, my semifinal, when it was only supposed to be 15 minutes because it was the last one, where when I left and opened the door, there was the people that were working there laying on the door because they were out there for so long, and they opened it and they fell because they were just like, it was, should have been 15 minutes. It was 2 hours. I had them cracking up. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I was doing this. So I was like, great. And right then and there, he's like, I guarantee you finals. So I was like, awesome. Thank you so much. Blah, blah, blah. And then it was, okay, now how do I get out of this? So Big Brother called. They said, okay, yeah, you can come to finals. And I was like, you know what? This isn't the time for me. And I was like, but I really love the opportunity. And I was like, damn, I hope this doesn't hurt my chances for Survivor. And they were perfectly okay with it. You know, they tried to convince me to go through with it. And then that ended, and that next fall I submitted the same video, but instead of saying what up Big Brother, I said what up Survivor. And I got a call that next day on that one too, and that's where history took me to be on Survivor 39, Island of the Idols.
So you had a whole dry run where you almost went to Big Brother 20 just to practice going through casting.
Yeah, I guess that's me. Clear, concise, and logical, where I was like, let me get a dry run. And I think that's why I was really good at it, is because it didn't mean much to me. I didn't freeze up. They would ask me any question. I would laugh at it. Where I noticed Survivor, they were the same questions, because like I'm the same person. I knew what avenue they were like casting me as. So I was like, but why am I getting stumped on these Survivor questions? It's the same question, I guess, because Survivor means the world to me, where Big Brother was more of just practice. So yeah, I practiced through Big Brother. So I know Big Brother's probably hates me right now, the casting department, for saying this, but if you want to be on Survivor, see if your video works for Big Brother and do what I did. Sorry, casting of Robin Cass.
that is a wild idea. I've never heard of that before. I mean, my casting story is I went through Big Brother and then got cast on Survivor, but it wasn't that I was like just, you know, messing with Big Brother. That was just my practice.
Yeah, I guess Big Brother also thinks I'm their number one, you know what I mean? Like the rest of my cast. Yeah, so, yeah.
You played that.
I was
too.
Building the alliance. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So you go out, Survivor, Island of the Idols. This season, there was a lot made about like that Jeff didn't greet anybody. We saw it more from the other tribe, from Lyro. When you first hit the beach and you're with your tribe, the season is called Island of the Idols, no Jeff. What was the thought over on Vokai?
It was nuts. Every season I've ever watched, they have that grand jumping off the boat. And in my mind, I was thinking, where's the idols? Where's the advantages? I listened to like Ron Clark's interview, I think it was with you, and he was saying that he realized where the advantage was because cameras are pointing there. So I was going to be like, all right, get on the boat, look to see where cameras are pointing, look around there for the advantages, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't have found it because I don't find advantages. But yeah, we get on the sand, we get in there, and we kept asking the camera people. We were just like, did the show start? And they're like, yeah, start, go. And we're just like, wait, how do we start? And they were just like, go live. And we're like, oh my God, this is weird. So for like a couple hours, just like, what do we do? So it was really, really weird. It was just so cool to be out there introducing these people that you spend a week with in pregame and hearing their names, hearing their voices. It was just, every feeling just rushed through my body of like nervous, excited, everything like that. So it was really cool to get the game started. And I just wanted to start building alliances from the second it started.
So what did you do?
What's so hard about this game is you dream of playing for years, right? Like Chelsea tried out for so many times, but once you get on the island, your job, as from my eyes, is to not play. You don't want to start talking strategy. You don't want to start forming alliances. You just want to start talking emotionally to everybody. So I made sure to talk one-on-one with everybody because, yeah, it's all fun in the grooves, making people laugh. But I was like, all right, let me talk to every single person one-on-one. And what actually ended up happening was Jason and me, I just instantly knew when he was in my finals for casting, and so was Janet. So you have like a little sense of like, you know, these people. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, when I came home from casting, I said to my girlfriend at the time, now fiance, I said, hey, I really like that lifeguard girl. She's older. And I like that New York City Jewish lawyer. And we get on the island and Jason goes, I'm like, I work for Nautica. And I was like, dude, they wouldn't put you in a jacket if you worked for like Nautica, like umbrella company. So I was like, I knew he's lying. But us three made a solid pack and they didn't show it. It was us in the kind of the walkway, and Janet, Jason and me were like, all right, guys, if we're in trouble, if we need to talk, put your hands on your head. And that's a sign that like, we need to find time to talk to each other. And them two then go, all right, we're going to go look where Tree Mail is. And I know rule one of Survivor, don't leave the group in the beginning of the game. So I was like, all right, you two go. I'll keep an eye on everyone else. Because I was like, I'm not leaving camp right away. So I went back to camp, bonded with everybody. And then instantly it was, where's Janet? Where's Janet Jason? Where's Janet Jason? And then you kind of see where it started going downhill for Jason from there. But it's actually a fun fact that Jason and Janet and I had a really close pact from literally the jump of the game.
Tommy, I know a big part of your game was managing your threat level and trying to not be threatening in any way, shape, or form, and always trying to not be the top target that people had. Now, was that something that you sort of arrived on after playing for a little bit, or is that something that you came into the game trying to establish from the start?
Once I got the okay from casting that I was on this show, I watched every season pretty much over again. And I would pick people that were like my archetype, right? So like I looked at Malcolm. Why didn't he win the game? I looked at, say, Ozzy. Why didn't he win the game? Why didn't, say, Chris Noble or anyone that was like, and always come merge, they're the big physical threats. So actually what I did before the game was eat a lot of McDonald's. I stopped lifting weights. I was trying to lose as much muscle because you can't help the way you look, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't help that I'm 6'4 and 215 pounds. So I'm like, instantly people are gonna be like, oh, he's athletic. So I knew I couldn't help that. But what I could do is not volunteer for anything. So the grappling hook, they all looked at me to do it. And I was like, Guys, I'm not that good at any of that kind of stuff. Like, I'm more of like a puzzle guy. They're like, you want to do the puzzle? I was like, no. Like Jamal, you went to Brown, like you do it. Like, I was trying to do everything, every single group challenge. I never was. I'm a lifeguard too. They're like, Tommy, do the swim. I was like, no. Janet's a way better swimmer. Up all the way until the shooting contest where it was Dean versus me. But if you look at the beginning of that episode, I even was on the sit out like Matt. You know how you need two shooters? Mm-hmm. So I was like, Missy, you shoot, and if you need me, I'll be there. So I convinced the tribe to literally put me on the sit-out mat where they had to climb up the ladder, jump off, go across the balance beam, get the balls to Missy. She had to shoot, and Aaron was treading water, throwing it back. And I'm like, I get to stand here. This is fantastic because merge is coming soon. Mm-hmm. But then the last target was so far away that Missy couldn't really reach it. So then I was like, all right, I need to step up. And that's when I beat DK chilling in his basketball debut. The long, pale, goofy redhead took him out. So I, up until that point, never had a hero role. And that was my strategy.
Yeah.
And also, I know I'm talking a lot, but come merge, you can believe it or not, I 100% threw challenges. Yeah. Up until 8 people left, where even to the producers, I wish they did this to confessionals, I would tell them, because they knew I was throwing it, I talked to them and I would say, guys, I'm coming in 7th place today, I'm coming in 5th place today, and I got them all perfectly correct. Whenever I was in that spot, I dropped. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to be, because a necklace, like I said at Final Tribal, saves you for one night, but it puts your target on the next. So I didn't want that.
Yeah, it is really interesting that I don't know if anybody else has ever attempted something like this, where you come in as sort of like a physical presence, but then don't do anything physical. I feel like that for most people who are sort of like the, you know, top tier athletes or people that have, you know, big physical size, then they want to, okay, I want to, you know, show you what I can do now in the challenge. And so you're not going to do anything, but people aren't going to say like, well, vote out Tommy because he's not helping us in the challenges. It's like that they know that you can help. You just haven't done anything yet.
Yeah. So like in the group challenge, I was lifting people up to the rope. I was helping out. I definitely wasn't a liability, but I wasn't a great asset. So it was just like, I played that middle row. I lowered my threat level, but I also wasn't the worst. So I just kind of stayed and hovered in that middle zone. But what also helped, you look at the cast.
Yeah.
Where look at even Vokai, Jamal, Jack, you know, Dan, these are big dudes. So I didn't necessarily have to step up because these guys are really good at stuff too. Where Jason, he was the smallest guy on our tribe, but he's probably 6 foot. I know he plays volleyball. I've done sports with him. He's athletic. Like it was a great season for me to be on because I was able to hide because there's Aaron, there's Dean, there's all these great athletes out here. So it was Missy, Elizabeth, an Olympic swimmer. It wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Okay, so Vokai is going to not go to the first tribal council. You guys were going to get that first win. And the first time you guys are going to end up voting is going to be when it's coming down to, is it going to be either Nora or Jason? And then it ends up being Molly. And from what I saw in the episode, you seem very conflicted about where you want to go. Can you just talk through that decision from your perspective?
Yeah, so I really felt close to Jason. Jason and I, up until merge, when he left, like I had a blast with. He was like a best friend out there for me. So I didn't want him to go because I knew I could trust him. He was a strategy guy I could talk with. But to be honest, that Molly vote, I was the last one to know about.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really a swing vote in that. You know, Eddie kind of did me wonders in that aspect where I had such a big bond, Tommy and his mommy, from finals, from casting into the game. So she was the one, like you saw in the episode, to tell me what was going on. Could I have got numbers to sway it and knock out, say, Jason or Nora? Possibly, because I knew I could just go and tell Molly, Jack, Jamal, and me. That's 4. I could easily pull in Janet. That's 5. And we could have done it. But in this game, pre-merge moves don't matter in my eyes. So I was like, why rock the boat, knock out Molly, who's super close with Jamal and Jack? I wasn't that close with her. So I said, if she goes, Jack and Jamal on the outside, but who are they going to come running to? Me. I was the next closest person to them. So did I have a lot to do with that vote out? No, but I was okay with it, knowing that, one, I'm staying in the majority. 2, the 2 people on the bottom are going to come to me to plan out the next move, which they were. They were trying to get out Dan and stuff like that. So I was again in the middle. I always wanted to be in the middle, getting ears from both sides. So everyone kept telling me what was going on, which is a really good part of my game.
Okay. Then Molly ends up going out, and then it's kind of quiet at Vokai until we get to the swap. We are going to see where Nora is going to come back and try to convince you all to let her be the caller. Could you just talk about what was the response over at Vokai when Nora ends up going to the Island of the Idols and coming back and wanting to be the caller?
Oh, man. I mean, from day one, you saw Nora. I love her because she was so entertaining, and I still love her today. But even before Molly went out, she told me this whole story of how she climbed over the whole entire mountain, went to the other side of the island, and found an idol. And that's why she's all scraped up and scrapped up. And she stole our map and everything like that. So I went back to camp, and I reenacted what she did, and I was having everybody laugh. But that's just Nora. But this, when she came back to do the calling, was amazing also, because we were just sitting there, and like she said, it was a TV show, right? She's doing in front, and she was like, I have all this information, but I can't tell you guys unless you let me be my job. And we're like, in my head already, I'm like, production's never going to give you information and hope that you don't tell us. You know what I'm saying? They would give you a piece of paper and you only can open this bottle if your team confirms you could be this job. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I was like, instantly something's up. And then she just went on and on and on. And you saw, I asked her, I was like, you get to pick your job. Why can't you be a retriever? You can't be a caller. And she was like, oh yeah, that's right. So it was hysterical because we knew right then and there we're not letting her be caller. So she was, we all blindfolded ourselves and she was practicing and Dan fell over the hammock. I bumped my head. I've probably never laughed so hard in my life having Nora try to direct us where to go. She would forget some of our names. She was telling us to go in circles. And then we were like, all right, let's have Jason try. And like you saw how great Jason did in that challenge, we all hit and Jason did it in like 1 second. He was like, Tommy, 5 steps forward, Dan, 5 steps to the right. And he just got us all back in like a minute. And we just looked at Nora and she's like, so I'm still the caller, right? And we're like, sure. And then we all came up with the plan. We're like, how do we do this? And then we were like, maybe in the trail, we're all blindfolded. There is an idol or something. We don't want Nora to get it. So let's just sit her out completely. So she has no shot of getting whatever this advantage was. And so that's when we planned. We're like, who's saying it? I'm like, I'm not saying it. And Lauren's like, I got this. Like, I'll tell her. And we're like, perfect, Lauren, you tell her. And that was one of my favorite moments from the show, watching it back. I was in tears watching it. It was so much fun watching Nora try to be the caller.
Yeah, that was when we did our live show that night, and the room was just howling during everything in terms of Nora going to the Island of the Idols and then coming back and talking with you guys about that. Who would have been voted out if there was another tribal council for original Vokai in between the Molly vote and the Swap?
This is a crazy question because it depends who you talk to, right?
Usually how it goes with these things.
Exactly. But you saw in that episode where Janet comes to me and said, Jamal wants out Dan.
Yeah.
And I said, are we doing this move for Jamal or are we doing this move for us? And so it was either going to be Jamal or Dan, but I know people don't like to hear Dan's name. He's not Voldemort. I'm going to say it because he had a lot of strategy points. I didn't want Dan to go home at that point because he preached to me day one. He literally said to me, hey, I'm a multimillionaire. I came out here for the experience. I will never betray you. I will never betray Janet. So we had this like, I was playing with like a +2. Janet was never going to backstab me. Mm-hmm. Dan was never going to backstab me. And I just knew it because that's their kind of people. And I was just like, Dan's not going. So it might have been Jamal, but you never know in Survivor. It could have been Nora. Could have even been me.
He
didn't
have an idol, though.
Jamal had an idol at the point?
Didn't he find the idol on the Vokai beach?
Yeah. We were all playing in the water and him and Jason were like sitting there and he went to find it. So yeah, I guess. Yeah, right. Yeah,
so I think he found the idol. It was the same episode that Nora went to the Island of the Idol. So that So if in the there was a vote where he was vulnerable, but then he did if you know everything is right in the edit, then he had the idol by the time you guys got to the vote where it was Chelsea that went home.
You're right. So he wasn't going home then because he would have played it. So then I don't know where everyone else was going to pitch their votes because a lot of people love Dan at that point, mm-hmm. too. Yeah. So maybe some votes would have been on Nora or some votes would have went on Jason. But Jason had
people don't ever go home with an idol in their pocket either.
True. Yeah. You really, really don't know. I think majority of votes maybe would have went on Jamal. But also, I liked working with Jamal, too. So I don't know. It's far back in the game. I don't remember who would have went home in that point.
Okay. One other thing I want to ask you about before we go to the swap. At what point did you know that Vince had visited your camp? Was that something that you had found out during the taping, or it wasn't until you watched the show back did you see Vince crawling around Vokai?
It was, so Vince coming after us, that was a great editing job. I didn't know Vince came to our island until after the game. So I had no clue until after day 39. I was home and, you know, we all just talk. So then that's when it came out. And I was so shocked because they showed me having night terrors. Remember me screaming like a little boy. So I have night terrors all the time. I do it at home. My fiance wants to kill me. But it's funny because when I had those night terrors, everyone ran out the shelter. but Jack just smacks me across the face and goes, stop it. And then I went right back to bed. So it was funny. They were kind of used to it. I would have them a good amount of times. But yeah, I had no idea Vince was on that stealing our fire until after the show.
Okay. And did you believe it when you heard?
Yeah. I mean, after the game, there's no point to lie. Right. What's hard about this game is we might have heard him, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to realize there's cameramen, there's producers that walk right. around all night long. So if I did hear someone by the fire, or even if I saw someone by the fire that like picked up a stick and threw it, the cameramen kind of clear paths for themselves. So I would have been like, oh, that's a cameraman. Because at night, it's not like New York City where there's lights. You don't mm-hmm. see anything. You barely can see your hand in front of you. So it would have been like, oh, there's a moving person. That's a cameraman. So
yeah, people come in and out all night. All right.
Yeah, and he didn't walk away with a flame of fire. He walked away with mm-hmm. like dust or ash. So it's like we wouldn't see that leaving either. So it wouldn't be like, what was that? Right. You know what I mean?
And you were sound asleep.
Oh. I can probably get a job as a voiceover for like scary movies. I would just sound possessed. Like, hit me up, Ring 2 or something. Like, I'm available for you guys.
Okay. All right. So you guys are going to get to the swap, and you're going to be at this swap, and you're going to swap. Even though you are up in the numbers, you're going to end up swapping 4-4 with 4 Lyro and 4 Vokai. Do you want to just talk through your reaction to the swap?
Yeah, so we knew the swap was coming, right? There's always going to be a swap before merge. And the reason there has to be a swap is because if you come to merge and you didn't meet anyone from the other tribe, it's going to be Vokai Strong. It's going to be a Pagani. It's going to be boring television. So we knew a swap was coming because I knew that we were going to merge a 13. Ask me how? I knew because when I went to tribal, there was 13 holes behind me. Mm-hmm. So I instantly knew, I go, guys, we're merging at 13, because why would they have 13 holes for the torches behind us? So we were like, all right, if they're not merging at 16, then when are we going to merge? So we knew we were going to merge, and we talked, I'm not merge, tribe swap mm-hmm. at 16. And we always talk like whoever has the advantage, whoever has the number advantage, throw the challenge. Let's go in Vokai Strong. You say all these things. If I had the numbers, I wasn't throwing my challenges either. So I didn't like the swap, clearly, because it was 4-4. I ended up with Lauren, Dan, and Jason, three of my best allies. So I was happy with that. But then I realized, dang, it's 4-4. It could go to a rock draw. It could do all these things. But if you look at our team, it's me, Aaron, Missy, Elizabeth, Elaine, Dan, Jason, like our team is probably the most stacked in history. I'm like, we have Olympic athletes, 2 D1 athletes. We have myself. I'm like, we're never going to lose. And I think we went, they didn't show a lot of reward challenges because of Island of the Idols, but we went 5-for-6 for challenges. So that was pretty good.
Okay. We haven't talked about Lauren yet. And I was wondering if you and Lauren had gotten close from original Vokai, or it wasn't until after the swap happened that you guys started to become especially close.
So original Vokai day one, you saw I like talked to her about, I knew she was married. So I want to talk about things that like about her life. Right. And then I don't know how it came up. And I was like, hey, I went to an all white high school. Like, I don't really know a lot about your culture and everything like that. And we had hours and hours of talks about like what a weave is, what is this? And she was so open and honest with me. And it was like we would crack up. Like Lauren and I were like brother, sister. We would fight all day long. She would tell me to shut up. She told me I was annoying. But like it was all out of love. So we like bonded. But I knew she was number one with Kelly. Her and Kelly were like, it was clear as daylight. So I was like, I never trusted Kelly from the second we walked on the beach. So I was like, dang, do I want to work with Lauren if I have to work with Kelly? I can't trust her. So we were close. But then at the tribe swap, there was no Kelly. And I was then her second closest. So me and her got really, really close. And then once Jason went home, we'll talk about that vote. But once Jason went home, me and her then were like, let's love each other. Me and you to the end. Brother, sister. They called us the lethal partners in crime in the confessionals and the producers, like, and right then and there, I think once Jason went home, we realized we're like, let's ride or die together. But before that, we were just like brother, sister.
Okay. So you guys are going to not have to go to tribal council on the vote where Tom goes out, but you guys are trying to figure out what to do when you have Elaine going to the Island of the Idols. Can you just talk through the thought process of, okay, you guys seem like, as from what Jason told me during the exit interview, it seemed like that you guys had a plan to, you guys simultaneously were working on recruiting Aaron, but maybe potentially voting out Aaron.
Yeah, so when it was a 4-4, Aaron came over to us and he's like, guys, I'm 100% with you because I want to swap now. Tommy, me and you are shields for each other. And then come merge, I showed you guys loyalty and then we can knock out the rest of Lyro kind of thing. So it was a smart move for him. But once Elaine went to the Island of the Idols and she came back, they stopped talking to us. So we instantly knew something was up. Mm-hmm. We were just like, what's going on? Aaron and Missy were so with us on voting out Elaine. What's going on? So we got together, the four original Lyra, Vokai, and we said, guys, we have to think the worst in this scenario. What's the worst thing that could happen? We thought, okay, she gets an idol from the Islands of the Idols. We didn't think of vote blocks, right? How often has that played? Do you even know?
Vote block? I'm not sure. I feel like it's been a vote steal more than a vote block. I'm not sure if I didn't know there was going to be a quiz, Tommy.
Stumped them. You get an F on that quiz. But no, exactly what our thought was. Who's heard of a vote block? We've heard of vote steals, but like we didn't cross our minds. We're like, let's pretend Elaine has an idol. So Aaron and Missy were still going to vote, in our eyes, Elaine, right? Perfect, whatever. Us four were going to put our votes on Aaron because he would have no idea he was going home. Mm-hmm. Aaron would end up going home. Elaine would play her idol. Missy would have ended up voting for Elaine, so them two would never work together. We would have the numbers. We would have Missy versus Elaine. We would be fine. So we played it as safe can be because we said, who's the last person Elaine's going to play her idol on? It was going to be Aaron. So that was our plan going in. Mm-hmm. But then we also, I went up to Elizabeth with Jason, and I said, Elizabeth, who does Elaine think she's voting for? And she goes, and didn't answer and like walked away. And we were just like, dude, something's up. Mm-hmm. But we did everything we possibly could. And everyone called us arrogant for saying, I'll go to rocks. That's how you have to do it. When it's 4-4, the team that's more willing to go to rocks will get that person on the other side to flop. So we mm-hmm. were like, let's oversell it. Let's be arrogant. Let's say we will never vote each other out. So then someone flops to our side. Yeah. We did everything perfectly. Island of the Idols really messed Jason up in that. And that's why when everyone asked me who deserves another chance, it has to be Jason. He really got messed up by that challenge.
Just to answer the earlier question of the vote block, when have we seen it before in Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers? It was famously used against Mr. Devin Pinto, which caused him to say,
that is not an advantage.
and his vote was blocked back at the Tribal Council where Alan Ball went home. The great Alan Ball went home.
Yeah, Alan Ball. Wow. Wow. Brings back good memories. That's crazy.
Yes. So, all right.
All right. So I'll give you extra credit.
Give it to the Survivor Wiki and my, you know, powers to know what the right thing to Google is.
For your test corrections. Okay, that's
fine. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Now, this is now a tough spot for you and for Lauren and for Dan, because now you went from 4-4. You were the tightest four. Things were looking good. Now you're down in the numbers. And now I thought that, I know you said you wouldn't throw the challenge, that, you know, I said this in the first guess, I didn't know why Lyro doesn't throw the challenge here, where they could have knocked off you or Lauren or Dan, as you and Lauren were trying to hope would be the case. But they didn't end up doing it. How were you guys able to keep the Lyra people on board with not throwing a challenge?
So this is actually crazy. So going back to that tribal, remember we were all going to vote, put our votes on Aaron, right? So mm-hmm. that's the reason I stood up and I whispered to Jason, I whispered to Lauren and Dan, put your votes back on Elaine. Because if we put our votes on Aaron, then he would never try to protect us or work with us, because I knew Aaron was my golden key. So then right when we get back, I go, Aaron, can we talk? And he goes, I'm sorry. And I go, sorry, dude. Like, you know, obviously the Survivor 101s, don't get mad. I go, dude, I'm a fan of this game. That was the right move for you. That was an awesome move. It's going to be great television. Like, but dude, if you go to the merge without me, you are going home first. You are the merge typical boot. You're the best athlete. Me and you are about the same size. You need to keep me along. So my pitch was always, I worked harder on Aaron than it showed. They showed me and Lauren doing that, like going around to everybody, which we did, but that was about it. I really worked hard on Aaron. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he goes, Missy and Elizabeth want to throw the challenge. They want to vote you out. He goes, but I'm not letting that happen. So he talked to his two girls. Elaine was with us at that point. I was really, really close with Elaine. She's like, Tommy, I'm not throwing this. You know, she called me Big Tree. I called her Little Tree. So I said, all right.
You were Big Red.
She calls me Big Red, but now she calls me Big Tree. Okay. Yeah. And we'll get to Elaine. Me and her are like inseparable at this point. But damn, what was I saying?
You're talking about how you talked to Aaron and he talked to Missy Elizabeth and then they're not going to throw the challenge.
Yeah. So then I still didn't believe those two. I go, smart move. Vote me out. Lauren comes running to you, Missy. And then the numbers are even or even in Lyra's favor, right? Mm-hmm. At merge. So when we went to the challenge, I said, awesome. It's two parts. So I go, how can we do this so that the people that might be throwing it don't have a great impact? This is the first time I was like, no, this is what we're going to do. Like, blah, blah. Aaron, do the puzzle. Lauren, do the puzzle. Dan, do the puzzle. Elaine, do the puzzle. Me, Elizabeth, and Missy will throw. Mm-hmm. Knowing, okay, even if they throw the challenge, don't even make one, we'll be behind, but at least you know it always comes down to the puzzle. And if you look back at the episode, look at the two girls' first throw. They weren't even close. But that was my strategy. How can we do the less damage so we can still win the game? So the four people that definitely weren't going to throw the challenge were on the last part, the puzzle. And we won by a little bit. And you saw my beast mode, my Hulk mode of just stick it in, freaking out like a scared little thing. But that's pure emotion. I know people were laughing at me. That was a second away from me possibly going home, and 1 second might have won me $1 million. Of course you're going to freak out. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you had a lot of close calls, I feel like, that there was a bunch of things where had one thing gone a little bit different, you know, not just like, are you going back to tribal council? You're probably going home in a couple of these different scenarios.
And I think that's what people have to kind of wake up and appreciate more about my game. I wasn't a goat. I got 8 votes. It wasn't because they were bitter, the jury, and they didn't vote for Dean. I got 8 votes because of how good my social game was and strategy. You know, when it comes down to, I almost went home a ton of times. Why would people try to vote me out? Because I had a big shot of winning the game. At Elaine's vote out, they didn't edit it on the TV channel. She stood up and go, guys, wake up, vote out Tommy. He's the shoe-in to win $1 million. You're all dumb if you sit next to Tommy. He's going to win the game.
Yeah.
So why are people saying that? It's because I played a damn good game socially and strategically. And people are all about, sorry, I'm going on my soapbox right now. Big moves. When you control the game, don't do big moves. I had a chokehold on the game. After that Kelly vote, I called out all the votes. So what? That's the best strategy ever. I sat there at Final Tribal and said, guys, I controlled this entire game. Mm-hmm. So why? What do you want me to do? Turn on Lauren? Why? She's my number. Turn on Janet? Why? I did at the end. So I did everything I needed to do. What big move do you want me to do? It would have ruined my game and I wouldn't have won. I controlled the game. Yeah. I didn't just make big moves.
Well, the idea of big moves are really, you know, upsetting the status quo. And, you know, you were not ever the underdog in terms of, you know, where things were. You know, there were underdogs that were trying to get their footing in the game and being able to, you know, topple the powers that be. But you were always firmly entrenched in the majority throughout the game, with the exception of at this one particular point when you could have been down in the numbers and they didn't want to throw a challenge.
Exactly. So, but I talked to Aaron after the game and he still says, he goes, Tommy, I needed you at Merge. Dan was going home then. He goes, I promise you, what's the point of me lying now? So again, just shows my social game. I had Aaron put his game on the line for me. And then at Merge, you just see everyone, like I see memes about it. It's like, why did everyone give Tommy the $1 million? I just had people always looking for me. It's hard. It's harder to win this game without advantages or idols or immunity necklaces than it is with it. So like my name still came up at almost every tribal and I escaped it with only two votes and I ended up winning the game.
Okay. So we end up going into the Merge, which is going to end up with, we're going to end up seeing the people that were from the original Vokai. They feel like, okay, we're going to maybe get back together, but you've got this post swap Vokai with the four Lyro people that are still there. But when the Merge starts, we hear from you that Kelly is your target. You feel like you're the person that you can't work with Kelly.
Let me make this clear. From day one, I've talked to Kelly about this. We laugh about it. When Brock, her boyfriend, met my fiance, she goes, Tommy's the one that wanted me out from day one. She knew it. So it was just like that. We had to work together through numbers, but she was always my target from the beginning of the game. So once Merge came, I don't see Jack there, which everyone knows. He even called me his number one, right? And I said, I have him in my back pocket. But I knew I needed Kelly out of this game. And here's another fact for you. Who was Kelly's other number one? It was Lauren. So whose move was it to get out Kelly? Was it my move or was it Lauren's move? Knocking out Kelly solidifies that Lauren now has to be with me. Mm-hmm. We knock out someone with two idols and everyone goes, but why would you flip to Lyro to give them the numbers? When it comes to Merge, in my eyes, it wasn't Vokai or Lyro anymore. It goes, where are my shields? If I went with Kelly, so ready, there's Kelly, Karishma, Janet, Jamal, me, and Lauren, right? Mm-hmm. Who's the biggest physical threat there? Me. Who's the biggest social threat there? Me. If I now go with the Lyro people, who's the biggest physical threats there? We have Aaron, Missy, Elizabeth. There's three above me. Who are the biggest social threats? I mean, Lauren.
I don't know if I would say maybe Elizabeth is above me as a physical threat.
All right, so two. Yeah. All right, at least someone's above me. Aaron and Missy, right?
Yeah.
And then what about likability? We have Elaine over there. We have Lauren over there. So I was like, why would I work with somebody? Mm-hmm. I've never met Karishma, ever. Kelly, me and her don't trust each other. And Jamal, I backstabbed once already. So my only alliance member over there is Janet because Jack's gone. So I was like, let me stay with the people I know has a lot of shields that will automatically go before me. And let me run the numbers through there. And also getting out Kelly solidifies that as my move over Lauren because I knew we were going to run the game together. And then it makes Lauren that much closer to me. And fun fact too, this they didn't show and Kelly with me, we were laughing about it. Kelly and me talked and she sat down with me and goes, Tommy, I'm sorry. I have never trusted you in this game. I know we started off bad, blah, blah, blah. But she goes, but I still have a hard time trusting you. Mm-hmm. And I go, Kelly, no, trust me. Why don't you trust me? She's like, from this point forward, let's try to be honest with each other. Cause right now I don't have your full trust. I said, I'm so sorry. I hugged her. And that's when you saw me go, let's vote out Kelly. Don't tell people you don't trust them.
It's not a great idea. Yeah.
So she sat me down and told me she doesn't trust me. So then I ran right to Lauren. I go, yo, we got to vote out Kelly.
Okay. Just, we didn't get to see this in the episode, but what was the reaction from the Vokai side of things when, Jack got voted out last night? Wait, what happened?
Oh, so when we got back, so as the boats, it was a cool scene of like the two boats like coming in really close together. You see everyone cheering. And if you look back at the episode, I am such stone faced because Jack and I, they showed a little bit, but like me and him were like best friends out there. And I saw he was gone. I saw Dean first and I go, uh-oh. So I was like, damn it. So I instantly knew, okay, someone played an idol, right? But then as I talked to Jamal, he kind of explained to me what happened. And I was just like, what? Nora said that Kelly told her to vote out? So that's another Kelly red flag. She told me she didn't trust me. And now I'm hearing that Kelly told Nora to vote out Jack. So I'm like, something's off here. And that's when, what also they didn't show is at that merge feast, I was like, let me get to Dean. Because Dean almost got voted off Lyro. He almost got voted off Vokai. Let him and me be bestest friends and run this game together. And they showed a secret scene of us. If you go online, it's really cool to everyone that's listening. But we became so close at that merge feast. And every single night we would meet at a log, we would talk strategy and walk away. And then we made it a point to not talk at all during the day. We wouldn't even look at each other. But at night we would meet up at the log, we would talk strategy, and we would break apart. So that's when Dean and I became really, really close. They didn't show that until the end that we were close. But me and him were really close at the merge.
Okay. So we're going to get into all the stuff at the merge where now, of course, that for us viewers who watched it, it's very hard to separate, you know, what we saw on television in terms of all of this stuff with Dan and Kelly from any of this. But in terms of when you were out there, was that even something that you knew about what was going on at the same time that you're planning this vote against Kelly?
My plan from Kelly was strictly strategy. My vote out for her, I didn't even hear one thing about Dan. So my first time seeing her talk with Dan at the pre-merge, I didn't know that happened. People would just mess with Dan. Dan was always like massaging everybody. Like he was like cracking people's backs. Everyone would laugh at him. So I was like, oh, the girls are laughing at him. No one ever came to me and said, Dan's making me feel uncomfortable. I had a scene where Jeff told me there was a scene where after that vote out, I went to the girl and I said, if Dan makes you feel uncomfortable, let's vote his ass out. I don't know if I can say that. And they go, no, he's fine. He makes us, there's nothing at all. So I go, okay. So like everyone wants to attack me for saying I didn't know, but I just listened to what people told me. And it wasn't my job to then be Detective Dean, you know what I mean? And like go and be like, so how do you feel? How do you feel? How do you feel? Like, I just took the information people gave me because it's their story. If they want to tell me, they should tell me. And then Janet was like getting attacked. But she was told misinformation. It was just so like whirlwind. And then we were like, all right, well, there's cameras. If something happened, they would take them out. And it was just like, what happened? But then right after that Kelly vote out, you saw on the screen, everyone's like, Dan's fine. So we're like, all right, like everyone's okay. Everyone's okay. And we moved on. It's a tough situation that we all learn from, and everything like that. But you as viewers see everything. Us as players do not. So we don't hear these confessionals. We don't see these conversations. You saw one scene where I was looking at Kelly talk to Missy and I go, hey, Lauren, they're talking strategy right now. And then they pan to them talking about Dan. I didn't know they were talking about Dan, but it makes me look bad. So I'm like, there's no win-win in this situation. So it was really tough watching it back and realizing, oh my God, this was a conversation. Oh my God, look at that confessional. So I learned a lot from this. And I'm glad Survivor did too.
Kelly is then going to get blindsided. She goes out of the game. And then we have the whole thing that goes on with Janet gets a lot of heat. It seems like you and Lauren are not really around for all the, like, where were you guys?
So after that vote out, they pulled me for obviously a walk, a confessional, because that was my move. I just vote out Kelly with two idols. She didn't trust me. So I'm like high on a horse, like way, way away in the sticks, talking about why I made the move, this and that. I come back. I'm like, what is going on? And everyone's yelling at each other and stuff. So I was like, all right, I don't even know what they're yelling at. Let me just go to bed and like wake up in the morning, because I just thought everyone, it was the first merge boot. Everyone's on edge. People are just meeting for the first time. It was just like, all right, I don't know what's going on. Let me stay out of it. Let me go to bed and wake up in the morning and see what's my next move to do. That's that. And then I talked to Janet a lot and I was like, Janet, what's going on? And she explained to me her side of it. And I was like, oh my God. and she was sleeping by herself at one point. So then I was like, hey, I'm going to sleep next to you. And then eventually everyone's stories were just like, wait, you heard this, you heard that, you heard this. And everyone's like, wait a second. No one knows the truth until we get to talk to Kelly. Kelly, we couldn't talk to until after the game. So we just like, let's put this on hold. Let's play the game and then talk to her, which we did.
I know Janet has said that you were somebody who, you know, helped come to her defense, even though we didn't see it in the episode. In what way did you defend her from being voted out, or in terms of like, were people trying to confront her more inside the game?
Yeah. So as you saw in that tribal, everyone was kind of attacking Janet. But what those people's viewpoint was, Aaron, Missy and stuff, Janet was saying, girls felt uncomfortable. And the girls were saying, we never said that to you. So everyone thought Janet was lying, saying, why would you use this as a game move and everything? So they started attacking her. I just sat there silent until I was like, it went on for like 10 minutes. And then I literally stood up out of my seat and I said, do not talk to a woman like that. Do not talk that. Everyone has a different story. Everyone has a different viewpoint. Everyone hears different things. She's doing what she thought was right and turned out to be what was right. But everyone else's viewpoint thought she was lying. So that's what's so hard about the game. So I just was like, guys, just stop. Like, she's a nice human being. Tommy and his mommy, you know, we spent Thanksgiving together. Mm-hmm. She's unbelievable. So like, I felt like it was people attacking my mom. So I was like, I can't handle this anymore. I don't care if it ruins my game. Let me stand up and protect her.
So Jamal is going to end up being voted out next. And was there any particular reason why you felt like Jamal had to be the person to go out after Kelly?
Yeah. So it ended up being, so now we have that newfound alliance, right? It's like Volkai 2.0 with Aaron right. And everybody. So everyone's like, let's get Janet out. Let's vote out Janet. And slyly, I just kept saying like, Janet's never going to win a challenge. Janet's no one likes Janet anymore because everyone was yelling at her. I go, she has nobody to get numbers. Jamal went to Brown. Jamal does a lot of, he's a very good public speaker. He has connections with people because no one knew Tommy and his mommy was a big thing. And it worked out perfect that we were on opposite sides of votes for a lot. But I was like, Janet, you saw me talk to her on the thing, on the log, that episode. I go, you're good. And I go, look at me. I'm not going to ask you if you have an idol. If you have an idol, do not play it. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I don't have an idol. And I go, you are not going home. I go, I know it's hard to believe, but you're not going home. So I kind of slyly took it away from Janet and put it on Jamal because Janet and I had a day one alliance. And I promised her the final three among a lot of people, but Janet and me were way closer. They showed a little bit of Tommy's mommy. You have no idea how much strategy and things we talked on this show.
So when Jamal goes to the Island of the Idols, was that another nail in Jamal's coffin that it's like, did you guys realize Jamal was gone and where he was?
Yeah. So again, like I always say, idols, necklaces, going to Island of the Idols are curses. Once he went, that was the nail in his coffin. It was floating, Janet, Jamal. And then once he went, it was like, all right, we got to knock out Jamal, especially when he came back with that like advantage, that fake advantage. So we were just like, okay, clearly he doesn't have an idol. Let's vote him out. We don't know what this whole thing with the legacy advantage is, but it's clear he doesn't have an idol. Let's get him out. So it made it that much easier to vote out Jamal. But on the other side, give Jamal some credit. Any Survivor player grabs that thing hanging from a tree. That was awful.
Oh, yeah.
It robbed Jamal from his game. That was so bad. I feel bad. It helped me out in my game. But like Jamal, he deserves another chance too, because that was literally so stupid. So even though it helped my game, it was just watching that, I'm like, that's what caused you to get voted off. That was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So Jamal is out of the game. And now this is where things, I think, really take another huge turn. So we have this twist, which they did in Ghost Island, where they split the two tribes or split a group of 11 into two tribes of 6 and 5. And this is basically like the unmerge. And so where the post-swap Vokai had really gotten a foothold, in one fell swoop, they end up sort of losing that foothold in losing Aaron and Missy in these double tribal councils. Now, just you're on the side where Missy ends up going home. Aaron, who was somebody who you had been working with, ends up getting knocked out there because all of those Vokai people were there. You end up avoiding going home and Missy ends up getting knocked out. Did you guys talk about this sort of as a contingency that it had happened before, of what to do if potentially this happens again?
We 0%. Nobody thought this was going to happen. Yeah, it happened in Ghost Island. It's kind of a new thing. I actually kind of like it because it can kind of, I think it kind of backfired both times on them, because like Dom and Wendell ended up on the same thing and didn't go home, but it could really shake up the game. But when it happened, when it broke up into two teams, I was like, I lost because of this silly pull a rock. I ended up on there's a team of six and a team of five. I ended up on the team of five, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's a disadvantage because it's one less person to vote out. Then I look around, who are my closest allies? Dan on the other side, Dean on the other side, Lauren on the other side, Nora on the other side, Lauren, right? On the mm-hmm. other side. I go, my top five allies are on the other side, and Aaron. So I go, and then I look at my side, I turn my head, I'm like, are you kidding? Missy, who's been gunning for me from day one, Elaine, who called me the biggest social threat to win the game, Karishma, who I've never met before, and Elizabeth, who also wanted me out. Four Lyro original girls mm-hmm. and an original male Vokai. Mm-hmm. People don't understand what I just did. They saw a lot on the edit of Missy kind of attacking Karishma and all that. And once that happened, I was like, whoa, let me sit back for a little bit. And I sat back. And then when I went for a confessional, I come back and all four girls are gone. They were gone for a good hour. They come back with like five sticks and they're like, oh, we collected wood. I'm like, yeah. So then I was like, all right, I got to work this. So Elaine and I went to the water fountain. Little tree, big tree. This is when she called me my infamous Big Red, which mm-hmm. I'm now called 24/7. My students even call me Mr. Big Red now. I'll rock it. But this is when I was like, yo, what is up, Elaine? She goes, they're coming for you, Big Red. And I was like, I know that, Elaine. Thank you. Like, what is your, what's going on? Like, how can we do this? What do we need to do? Like, you know these people. I don't know them. Like, why don't you vote me out? I don't get it still. But Elaine's like, Tommy, Big Red, I am rocking with you to the end. Another person that put their game on the line for me, social play. I slept every single night in the hammock with Elaine, and I would always put my like big foot in her face. She ended up punching me. Like mm-hmm. we had a great relationship. So she was with me. I knew it. Elizabeth and Missy, I knew weren't coming my way. So then it was Karishma. And what they didn't show is I sat on the beach with Karishma for a good hour. And I talked about my job and I talked about how I respect people. And I go, Karishma, has anyone ever worked with you ever in this game? Has Missy ever worked with you until this moment when she needs your number? When she goes back to the original, when there's 11 people left, does she need your number anymore? No. So is she going to care about you? No. Karishma, this is our time. We just met. We couldn't build that bond, but now this is the turning point in your game where you come with me. We can now run this game together. People won't know us as a dynamic duo. Let's do this. And she looked at me with tears in her eyes and she goes, this is the first time I felt like I have some contingency. I have some, like I have a foot in the sand. I have some sway in this game, I said, and that's how you'll always feel if you work with me. And then instantly right then and there, I knew I was good. Mm-hmm. And then I also talked to Elizabeth. I go, Elizabeth, I know the plan and I'm letting you know I'm not going home. I played a little strong arm and I go, if you write down my name, I'm surviving. We go back to camp with all my allies. And well, first thing I'm going to say is Elizabeth is the one that wrote down my name. And who's going to go home next, Elizabeth? And she was just like, she like freaked out. So instantly then too, I knew she was voting me out. And that just gave me like the, like the cement like stamp where she was like, she wouldn't have froze. She would have been like, I'm not voting you out. So I knew they were coming for me. And I think I did a really good job with Elaine to sway Karishma over to us. And that's another time Karishma and Elaine, who I didn't really work with that much, saved me. Social strategic game. And then again, I never played a loyal game. And then I voted Karishma out the next time. But it's what I had to do in order to win this game.
Yeah. You know, I talked that about that specific move with Elaine in the exit interview. And I asked her, Elaine, why did you do that? Why did you vote out Missy instead of Tommy? He was sitting right there. He was a sitting duck. And she said that she felt like that, you know, Missy was always gunning for her. Missy was trying to get her out as well. She said, I think it was a bad move for Karishma, but she still liked that move for herself.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think of it as Elaine and me were super, super close. And she was also really close with Lauren. If Elaine voted me out, you have to think you're going back with the other people, which was my sixth strongest alliance member. So you have a lot to explaining to do. And they're going to be bitter at the people that voted me out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the swaying point. Also, it was like, I kind of was, like I said, I felt like the Godfather, sorry, Carl, where I had these people like,
yeah,
ready to attack. Oh, you bring up Tommy's name, I'm going to vote you out. I'm like, whoa. And we'll get to the Dean whispering to me, because when we got back to camp, that's when I realized, I said, I'm winning this game. That was the first time I was like, I 100% am winning this game. So we'll get to that. Do you want to go to that or what's next?
What was your reaction when you saw Aaron got voted out by the other group when you showed up at that tribal council?
I wasn't shocked because we talked about voting out Aaron next because he is a physical threat. I didn't want Aaron to go because, again, he was a physical shield for me. So I wasn't shocked because I just looked at the drawing of the rocks, the two new tribes. And I just looked, I'm like, Lauren is never voting out Dan, Janet, Dean, or Nora. Like them five were just never voting each other out. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was like a bad rock draw for Aaron. He had nothing to do. He was going home.
So in the next round, that was when Elizabeth got voted out. You worked very closely with Lauren in terms of getting everybody to sit out of the challenge and end up eating the breakfast. I was surprised that you were, you know, so gung-ho all in on, you know, working on getting this idol for Lauren. Any worries about that you were, you know, being seen as like potentially somebody who was going to be caught up in this caper?
At that point, it's funny because my dad watches with me and he goes, out of everything, he goes, the one thing I ask for you is you do not sit out a challenge for food. That was the one thing he said for me. And it was his birthday. So I was like, yo, these are signs. Like, I can't sit out.
It was his birthday during the taping.
Yeah, it was his birthday that day of the challenge. And that was the one thing he said during the taping, during that challenge, was his birthday. And the one thing he said was, do not sit out a challenge of food. So I was like, it kind of was like, oh no, something's going wrong. Like, this is a sign from God, the survivor gods. But I realized if I screw it up, or if I even complete in the challenge, right, and I win, now my number one alliance member is mad at me. So I knew the idol was only good for two tribals. So I wasn't scared that it was good forever. If it was good forever, then maybe I don't even help her at all. Maybe I blow up her spot a little bit. Cause again, I don't want my strongest alliance member to have a leg up on me, but knowing it was only good for two tribals, I was like, she's in no trouble the next two tribals. And she is fine. But that was really fun to convince people to like, not do the challenge. We were just like, oh, everyone hungry this morning. I was like, it was cause me and her would laugh at each other, like knowing what we were doing and everyone else didn't. So it was real, real fun to like watch us kind of like pull that out and, strategically get everyone to sit except the two that needed to and Karishma, who was in trouble. So it was really fun.
Tommy, at what point did you know about the Boston Robin Sandra of it all?
Again, Elaine and me were really close. So when Elaine came back after her vote block, after that not before the vote out, but once Jason went home, she came back and she was like, guys, you were coming for me, blah, 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 blah. And then she was like, let me tell you what the idol Island of Idols is actually. So after Elaine went, that's when I found out that Boston Rob and Sandra were there. And it was so funny because the producers are laughing. So when she told me, it was like me one on one and Lauren was there, and Lauren's freaking out. And she goes, Tommy, why aren't you freaking out? I go, I don't want to learn from Boston Rob or Sandra. And like, even the cameraman started laughing. I was like, I feel like I don't want to learn from them. I would want to learn from different people. But I do love Sandra, Boston Rob.
Who are you hoping for?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know who I was hoping for, but like, I just viewed my game as way different than both of theirs. Like, I guess not. Like, Sandra kind of played a similar game to me, but I just like heard of like what the challenges were. It was like, make a fire against Boston Rob. I'm like, what does that really teach? Like, I just heard, like, I learned the lessons along the way. And I was just like, yo, they're literally teaching you nothing. And it's just putting you like a target on your back. Like, literally, they're teaching you like how not to play the game. I feel like they were just messing with people's games. And that's what proves it. Like, I literally won without the theme. And Jeff is probably so mad that I won without Boston Rob and Sandra. But, it was cool, but I did kind of try to do the Boston Rob buddy system. And that's like something I watched, and I, without the buddy system, I wanted everyone to be my buddy. And this kind of goes into my social play and what Boston Rob and Sandra did at the last episode. I was having a drink with Sandra and she goes, Tommy, can I tell you something? I said, sure. She goes, six people that came to the Island of the Idols told me that you were their number one. And she goes, I turned to Boston Rob and I go, who is this Tommy guy and how is he so good at this? And it's true. Dean was, I was his number one. Lauren, I was her number one. Janet, what's it called? Dan, I had Nora take me to the end. Elaine. So I had six people saying I was their number one, which was so hard because what I had to do is go to each one, promise them the final three. But then what I would do is say, all right, Janet, me and you have been day one people, but obviously everyone thinks Lauren and me are the dynamic duo. That's perfect for us as a shield. Why would I bring Lauren to the end when we made every move together? It makes no sense, Janet. I would pitch it to them like what they want to hear. Then I would go to Lauren, and why would I sit at the end with Janet? She's going to win the game. It makes no sense for me, but it's perfect for us because I keep promising her it, which means if she's good with me, she's good with you. Then I would go to Dean. I would say, why the heck would I sit next to both of them? And so it was constant me going back and forth like a pinball. I was being honest. I would tell people, I'm promising these people the finals, but why would I do that? And I would make it so like disgusted that I would even sit next to them. And you kind of saw it when I called Lauren a jealous girlfriend. She was 100% right. I was sitting at the end with Dean. 100% I was going to the end with Dean. But when she brought up to me, I was like, you're acting like a jealous girlfriend. Why would you even think that? I would kind of try to like belittle them, as mean as that sounds, to being like, you shouldn't even think that. That's so stupid. Why would I ever do that? But she was right. But the way I was able to like sway it was great. It was cool to have five number ones, but I do love them all.
Okay. So ultimately, Karishma is going to play her idol. She ends up knocking Elizabeth out. Any thoughts on why you guys ended up putting votes on Karishma there instead of going after Elizabeth outright?
So I said that in my final tribal speech, and I give Dean a lot of credit. Me and him, and with everyone, we put it in the order exactly at that point for who is going home all the way to the final three. So we were like, this is the order it needs to go, all the way to Janet going at five, Lauren being our fire person at four. We called it the whole way through and exactly why I don't do big moves. But the reason I wanted Karishma out so badly at that point, everyone's like, why don't you keep her to the end? Because then she takes my seat. I needed to get the quote unquote goats, or the people that can not go zero vote finalists, out of the game, but only keep one, which was Nora. If both of them were at the end, they could team up like they almost did to vote me out. But at that point, it was 4-4. So it was harder for them to get me out. But I needed Karishma out of the fear that what almost happened, them coming together, assembling the GOAT army and voting me out. So that's the reason I was like, we got to get Chris Mount now. It keeps my shields and perfectly I sit at the final three with Dean and Nora.
Okay, so Elizabeth goes out and now we get to the family visit when, again, it's coming in for another potential 4-4 vote. It seems like that's your weakness, these 4-4 votes that people are able to potentially almost get one over on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And it's funny where you see at the tribal. Okay, let's go back to the loved ones visit, right? Mm-hmm. So the loved ones challenge. Before we went out there, it just shows how close Dean and I were. I go, Dean, Lauren's very emotional. I have to take her if I win. And then I go, but if you win, do not take me. I will be your eyes and ears at camp. And if I win, I'm not taking you. Deal? And we shook hands that we weren't going to take each other to be eyes and ears on both sides.
Right.
The edit just didn't show that me and Dean were close at that point. So it made no sense. They're like, why did Tommy take his four number closest allies? Which I didn't. I left Dean back. But I always told my fiance Nicole, I'm going to throw the loved ones challenge because no one that wins the loved ones reward wins the show because it really makes everyone bitter and hurt. I hug her. I go, I'm going to win this challenge. I can't not win this challenge. It's so hard to not win the challenge. So my whole plan went out the window. I win the challenge and I had to take Lauren. And you, of course, every single person was going to take Dan at that point because he had his kid out there. Mm-hmm. So that was like a common sense, like kind of Gavin. Everyone's going to take Gavin in season 38. Everyone's going to take the dad with his little kid. So that's why we kind of got stuck with that. It was a great loved ones. I come back and I go, okay, guy. So I go, Dean, what happened? And he goes, Nora ripped you apart for like 4 hours. And Lauren ripped you and Lauren apart, how you guys are the two-headed dragon that needs to be slayed, that you guys are running this game since day one. Why don't we all see that? Blah, blah, blah. And then I talk to Elaine. She goes, no, we just talked. Let's vote out Dan. Then I talk to Nora. I go, Nora, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, obviously trying to do damage control. I hugged her. I brought her to the water. I was like, I will take you on every reward from here on out. And she goes, no, we just talked about voting out Dan. And then same thing with Karishma. I go, why is anyone voting out Dan right now? If he's going to be like a zero vote finalist over Lauren and me or Janet, makes no sense. Mm-hmm. So then I knew something was up. So I go, Dean, can we go for a walk? So I talked to Dean. And what I actually learned was the loved ones were there for like 4 days before the loved ones challenge. So they were like on a little vacation. They take them snorkeling and stuff like that. And Dean's mom, Lori, and my fiance, Nicole, were best friends on the trip. Okay. They would drink wine every night together. They would eat every night together. So before we left loved ones, Nicole goes, what's the deal with you and Dean? I said, I have a final three with him. I plan to hold it up, but I have a final three with literally every single person in this game. So we laughed. He goes, what can I tell his mom? We're really close. I said, Dean and I are going to run this game, hopefully, but I don't know if I can trust him. That was what I left off. I came back. When I went on that walk with Dean, I go, hey, Dean, I want to let you know that Nicole, my fiance, and your mom are best friends. And they said they have wine every night together, that they comfort each other. We were only three guys left out of nine people that went on the trip that they were just, and he was just like, wow, I was going to tell you this, but this made it clear to tell you, dude, they're voting you. And then they yelled, lockdown. Mm-hmm. And they locked us down, which to the listeners means that we can't talk. We have to get our stuff. And we go to tribal council. So Dean was about to tell me the plan, but they locked him down literally the second he was telling me, but he got enough out where I knew they were going to write my name down. So I hope I'm being clear with this. And then we walk to tribal council, we sit down. And then that's when I was like trying to play it cool, because obviously if Jeff sees you whispering, he's calling you out. So I was trying to like look away, maybe answer a question first. And that's when you see Dean whisper to me. So one, Dean's move wasn't out of nowhere to save me. Me and him had a real close bond, a final two since merge. And two, the loved ones trip of his mom and my fiance being friends really helped kind of solidify his thinking to tell me I was going home.
Okay. There was a lot of talk at that tribal council where it was the live tribal and you guys were sort of deciding what to do after then Nora ends up spilling the beans about how Elaine has an idol of what you guys were ultimately going to do. You end up landing on voting out Karishma at that tribal council. So you just talk through the thought process of what you guys were going to potentially do of whether or not to vote out Nora.
So this was cool because it was my name. I was going to go home. So pretty much everyone looked to me for what to do. So instantly in my head, I go vote out Nora because she's the one that was I've been with since day one that should have told me. But then I stop and thought, I go, wait a second. Nora's really emotional, right? And I could pull that card a little bit where I'm like, I can't believe you did that. You know, we were brother and sister. She always called me. I was her brother. So I was like, why would I vote her out when also she hates Dean? So why would I vote out somebody that doesn't get along with someone else? So there's only seven people left. If you don't get along, you're not going to work together. And then I go, Karishma, I kind of backstabbed her once after she saved me. So I needed her out and she would have took my spot. But what I did was we all stood up. I go, Elaine, you were coming for me. We sleep together every night, blah, blah, blah. I knew she had an idol, so I wanted her to play it. So when you saw me whispering to Lauren saying, like, Nora's an effing liar, that's when Elaine comes over and she's like, I swear on my grave, blah, 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 that I would never vote for you at that tribal. So I go, Lauren, we're voting out Elaine. And we walked away. Well, I think it was Lauren, somebody, or maybe Dean. I go, we're voting out Elaine. Let's walk away. Making it a point that she had to play her idol. Mm-hmm. Then I whispered to everybody else, we're voting out Karishma, put two votes on Nora just in case, blah, blah, blah. So what happened, and that's why they didn't show it really well at my final speech, is like, Dean saving me was my big move. That's not how I said it. I was saying, look what I did in that orchestration where I got Elaine to play her idol by telling her she was getting votes. And Karishma goes home. That wasn't a number for me. And then Nora, the person I saved, takes me at the final three. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot more strategy that obviously you can't see because there's a lot of whispering. But that was my strategy behind one where I was going to go home and I ended up getting zero votes, got someone to play an idol, knocked out Karishma, and had the person I saved take me in the final three. So I thought that was a pretty good move.
Okay. So next, Elaine is going to go out at the final seven, and it looks like in the episode that there's some talk about potentially of what if maybe the women got together and voted out Nora. Did you have any sense of that that was a potential plan that was coming together?
Yeah. Again, which is nice about having a lot of number ones, but the one person that was such my golden like star in this whole thing was Janet. Mm-hmm. Janet would tell me everything. So Janet goes, hey, they're planning on voting out Dean. So just want to let you know, I'm not doing it. So I wasn't too afraid. And then Lauren literally came to me with the fear
voting
of
out
me.
Dean?
What'd you say?
Voting out Dean? You said?
Yeah, weren't they going to vote out Dean at that point?
I thought that so the plan was that there was going to be, because Dan was putting a vote on Nora, and that that the move was Elaine was trying to get both Lauren and Janet to also vote Nora. So it would have been four votes on Nora.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. Because, yeah. So yeah, they were afraid of like all of that coming together, but it just wasn't going to come through because Janet and Dan were never going to do that. We needed Elaine out. If Elaine sits at the end, she 100% wins. If Janet sits at the end, she 100% wins. So we had to vote out Elaine. It was super hard to do. Like you saw her touching story.
Mm-hmm.
But she put on a good fight for being such a clear cut winner. She almost convinced Lauren to do it because Lauren's very emotional. She has a big heart. And like she said in her exit interviews, Jan and Lauren turned to me and go, are we doing this? I said, absolutely not. We're not voting her out. We are voting her out because she blew up before that, telling everyone to vote me out because I'm a shoo-in to win $1 million, that you all need to wake up, that I promised everyone the final three, that Tommy can't bring seven people to the final three, and if he gets there, he's winning. So at that point, I was like, yo, she 100% has to go because she just blew up my entire game. So her going was huge for my game.
Now, are you recently hanging out with Elaine?
Yeah, it was fun. I went to see her in Kentucky. We got to shoot guns. We went mudding. We rode this thing called a Razor, which is this, like, souped up quad that actually she just texted me as I'm talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. We souped up quad that you drive on the highway that goes like 80. And I was driving it down the highway going like 80, and I was swerving and it almost flipped over. And she turned into mom mode. She started hitting me. She's like, I'm gonna throat punch you. Get out of the car. She made me like stand on the side of the, and then she like let me back in the car, and then she took the keys away from me. And then for the rest of the 4 days hanging out with her, I couldn't drive anything, and I had to ask permission where I had to go. So she turned into my mom at that point. But Elaine and me and my dad and her, like, everyone is so close to Elaine. I talk to her all the time. I love Elaine. She's an unbelievable person. I'm so glad Sia awarded her the money.
Yeah, I got to talk to Elaine and her girlfriend a little bit at that finale party, and it was a lot of fun to get to know her a little bit.
She's casting gold. Like, you got to put Elaine on every season. But also, you got to give her credit. She played dumb. Elaine's a very smart girl, and she had a lot of strategy. She wasn't just going to win at the end because she was likable. She was going to win also because she had a lot of, like control, and she tried to do big moves like vote me out, but Dean just didn't do it. So she had a lot of great ideas. If Dean went with her, she probably was winning the game. So she's an unbelievable player that needs another chance.
Okay, so Elaine goes out. In terms of how the television show presented this, Elaine goes out with about 38 minutes left in the episode. We end up seeing Jeff walk up on the beach, tell you Dan is out of the game. From your perspective, did you guys get a lot more information than we ultimately got in the episode in terms of what happened with Dan when there were only six people left?
So what happened was we get back to camp. This is the next day, right? Mm-hmm. So we're all sitting in the, it's daytime. We're all just sitting. There's nothing to do because it's like day 30 something. You don't fix your shelter anymore. You don't get more wood. You just kind of sit there. So we're all just sitting there bored, waiting for the next thing to happen. And they pull you for interviews. So they pulled me for an interview. They pulled Lauren for an interview. They pulled Nora for an interview. Then they pulled Dan for his interview. And then you think nothing of it because we're just like, all right, he's gone on his interview. And then like an hour later, Jeff walks in. It's exactly what you saw. We then ask him, is his family okay? And he goes, yes, his family's okay. Is he okay healthily? And they go, and that's what Janet asked. And he goes, yep, he's healthy. He's fine. But guys, no more Dan talk. We're not going to let you talk about Dan. We're just moving on from it. And that's it. There's five of you left. You have a shot at a million, one in five in $1 million. No more Dan talk. So we literally didn't get to talk about it. And then they messed me up with my confessional where they're like, they kept asking me, they're like, so what are you going to do now that Dan's gone? I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't know what happened. They're like, no, what are you going to do when Dan's gone? And I was like, you know, I just got to keep playing. And that's what they aired and made me look bad. Like, I wasn't curious of what happened, or I wasn't like, oh my God, what did he do? Like, they just didn't let us talk about that.
Right. Right. So I thought that you ended up getting, you know, unfairly dragged during that whole part where people were like, you're just talking about the game. But it's what are you supposed to talk about?
Exactly. And you don't realize
based
those are
on the information you have at that point in time.
We had no clue. Now that we watched the episode, I learned more about it. And at that point, you have to realize interviews that we talk, those confessionals are 2 hour long. So in that 2 hours, every single one of us talks about what we're going to do in our next with our game. Mm-hmm. They just aired mine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why they did that to me. But
winning edit is a blessing and a curse.
Hey, yeah. So and I'm not Reddit. I'm not as boring as you think. But again,
don't antagonize them, Tommy. They don't like that.
Oh, yeah. No. They're going to come at me. But but again, you have to realize I went out there to play a game. I didn't. What's it called? I didn't play to play again. People, I think, even in my cast, you hear it almost every day. Do you think I'm going to be asked back? Do you think I'm going to be asked back? Like, I never asked that. I just wanted to play the game. I wanted to win the game. I wanted the experience. And if I get asked back, great. But like, I played just to play the game. And I think that got away. But also, I know I'm rambling, but can I talk about after Karishma goes home, the Dean and the Nora fight, what happened with the shoes?
Sure.
So when we got back, I almost went home. So I was like kind of panicking. I held myself together at Tribal. I'm sitting on the tree stump where you see us all talking. And Dean tells Nora, like, can you exit this conversation? So she exits the conversation. She hides Dean's shoes on top of our sign. And this is when I realized, and Dean's like, I'm going to go to bed. And this is when I realized, I'm like, wow, I have a lot of people fighting for me. Because Dan then goes, I'm going to go yell at Dean for thinking of voting you out. Then, what's it called? Then Lauren was like talking to Elaine, like, why would you go along with that? I'm hurt. And then Janet was like yelling at Nora. And I'm sitting there by myself. I'm like, whoa, I have like an army of people just like screaming at people to like vote me off. And I think that's why I also went so far in the game, that people were afraid to bring up my name to vote me out because they knew I had so many connections that would come back to me. But the funny part of this is I went to bed, I wake up to Dean like hitting me in my shoulder, and he was like, dude, my Jordans are gone. And I was like, oh, he's gonna freak out. So I was like, oh, I saw Nora put rocks in them and throw them in the water. He's like, no, she didn't. No, she didn't. I was like, no, I'm just kidding. They're up on the sign. Mm-hmm. And I was like, just woke up. So I'm still laying there. And he's like, Tommy. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I was like, oh, you need me to reach them. So I ended up going up the sign and getting it for him. But then what's even more funny, the next day was a reward challenge, individual for a spa.
Mm-hmm.
And I won it. So it was like, you had to climb up this tower, get these bags of balls, army crawl under something, jump over a couple walls, and then like hit a block, like the carnival game, like the blocks off the table. And I won it. So he goes, Tommy, you could bring two people. So I go, all right, you know, I promised Nora that I would take her on every reward since I didn't bring her on the loved ones. And bringing her was like solidifying. I'm trying to really build up Nora because I knew she was going to the end. And he goes, you can pick one more. So I was like, instantly, I just started laughing. I was like, I have to do this. I go, Dean. And Nora then gets away from standing next to me and walks back and goes, I'm not going with Dean, like starts screaming at him some more. They ended up going together, having like a healthy conversation. But I was like, it was a spa and a movie. I got to like watch them like kind of fight it out. But it was fun.
OK, so we end up going to then what we see in the finale, and we finally get to see you go to the island of the idols. What was your reaction to finally getting to go to where Rob and Sandra had been staying all this time?
I was reading Island of the Idols on the sign for 37 days or whatever day I went there. And I was like, finally, I get to go. Finally, I get to see Boston Rob and Sandra, because again, I'm a super fan. I really enjoyed their games. Like, I want to go talk to them. I get there. Nora brings them this like huge coconut plant as a housewarming gift. It was hilarious.
It was never explained what plant Nora was carrying.
I don't know what it was. I think she like dug up a root so they could replant it. I was like, Nora, we're here for like two more days. Then we literally shake hands with them and they go, drop your buffs. So I go, never in Survivor history at day 35 or whatever day it was, do you say drop your buffs with five people left? I go, clearly there's another test. But I just was like, oh, cool, it's rare. And like everyone left. And then they leave. And I was like, are you serious? This is what I get from Island of the Idols, a buff and them walking away. I didn't even get to say hi to them, really. But once they left, then that's when I was like, okay, let me go get water, quote unquote, and check the buff. And
yeah, this like, was a real caper.
This was hilarious, right? It was fun to watch. It was great. It was, I instantly saw the machete on the buff. So I started looking for all the machetes. I remember whatever season it was when they dumped water on like the side of the water well, and it was like a symbol. So I was dumping water on the machetes and stuff like that. And then I instantly saw a machete like perfectly placed in a coconut, and I go, all right, let me crack it open. I crack it open and I was like, there's nothing inside. And the producers are like, yeah, there's something inside. I'm like, yo, there's literally nothing inside. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what color is it? I'm like, I don't know, I'm colorblind. So they started laughing. I'm like laughing. I'm like, whatever. But it was, even if you ask Dean on your post game or whatever, it was more of like something fun to do. We knew we were voting out Janet. She had the idol nullifier, right? We had the idol nullifier. She had to go. Janet wins if she makes the final three. So it was just like, all right, let me tell these people. I told Janet also. She was helping me look for it because it was Janet's going home no matter what. Then it's final four. You can't play an idol. So I was like, we're just bored out there. I was like, let me tell like my boy and my mommy if like, let's go search for it and like have fun, because if you find it, nothing ends up happening. But I didn't think of like, oh, you can use it as seat talk, because I didn't view it as like, which I said, it was just, yo, you didn't use it. It's literally a souvenir. But we'll get to that. And so then I saw it, it was red. Then I realized that one plank was like way different color. So I picked it up and I was like, this H. I went by the swing. I looked under the swing. I looked everywhere. I couldn't find it. And then DK Chillin turned to DK Villain and stole it from under my nose. But that was fun to watch. Like, me and him got to watch it together, and we were just punching each other back and forth, laughing at it, because people don't realize, like, they kind of built this rivalry between us two, but we had no, like, animosity to each other. We were, like, just best friends playing. So it was like, it was fun to see them like try to pit us against each other. It was fun.
Tommy, are there any other ways that being colorblind affected your 39 days on Survivor?
No, not at all. But it's funny. Michelle Fitzgerald texted me last night and said, hey, she lives in New York City. She's like, hey, I'm doing a escape room. Do you want to come? And then her next text was, oh, wait, you're colorblind. You probably can't do that. LOL. And I said, no, I go, I'll just bring DK Villain and he'll help me. I'll just tell him all the clues. Yeah. But no, it didn't impact my game at all.
But I think maybe it did, because, you know, going back to with finding idols and stuff, you know, in terms of where there was that big idol hunt when you guys were on the family visit, Nora talked about like, OK, this is what we need to do. All right. This is that I, you know, we found this because this had blue on it. Use your reticular activating system. And of course, we're going to look for this specific color that's the same as the buff. And that's what's going to, you know, pop. And you hear people when they say they find the idols, oh, I saw this like little like a speck of blue or orange. True. And that's what leads people to find these idols sometimes.
I was just going to quiz you. I go, what term did Nora just use? But you nailed it without even my question.
I'm a Nora expert.
I guess, you know, I it's hard for me to say it was a disadvantage, because I don't know what, say, you see it as, you know what I'm saying? So like, I don't know what I'm against, but I guess it hurts me. I'm just going to use it and say that's exactly why I didn't find an idol. Producers and colors, that's what I'll say. But no, I don't know. But I did look, and like, you hear me say at the final tribal speech, I'm like, I didn't want an idol. Of course I look for idols like crazy. I just didn't find them. So maybe it was because the colors, I couldn't really see, it just looks like a twig to me or whatnot. But I just never ended up finding one.
Okay. So ultimately, Janet is going to get the idol nullifier used against her. Was there anything that I know this was hard for you to untangle, where, you know, Tommy and his mommy, and basically you're going to be betraying her. Was there any sort of way that you were trying to brace her for what was about to happen?
It was, I think what helped me was telling her also. They didn't show it. She was looking for the clues also, because that was the day she was going home. So it wasn't like me using her because I knew she was going to go home. It was me more of like keeping us occupied, because I feel like if I just like sat next to her, I would have ended up crying, because you don't understand, like, watching the television, it's like, why do you backstab them? It's so easy. Like, you fall in love with these people out there. Like, she was a real mom to me. So it was so hard, but I guess keeping occupied on the scavenger hunt and stuff like that like helped. But like that tribal council, like, it was even hard for me to answer Jeff's questions, because I was like choked up, and I think she knew something was up because I couldn't even look at her. Most of the time it didn't bother me cutting somebody, but it was just like, I literally, when Janet looked at me, I had to look away, because as everyone sees, she is an outstanding, unbelievable woman that changed my life. So it's hard to vote out someone when they are so important to you.
Okay. So you're going to get to the final four here. And even before the challenge, you're going to put in some talk with Nora here about how that you don't know how to make the fire, right? This all happened before Nora actually won the immunity.
Yep. So I instantly knew. I go from Survivor. I always watch. Once the person wins, then everyone kisses their butt, right? Mm-hmm. So I go, Dean's a very smart player. I know he most likely. I was like, I feel like everyone's going to take Nora, but I go, what happens if Nora wins? Like, let me start like working her now. And I kept pitching. And like, you hear me say, I'm like, everyone's like, oh, who would win, Lauren or Tommy, blah, blah, blah. I use that. I would call myself her sidekick. I would do this to make her, paint her as this unbelievable player, which she is. Lauren's a phenomenal player that deserves a second chance too. But I kept talking to Nora. I go, Lauren's a 10 vote finalist. She's going to beat us all. We need to get her out. I go, but Nora, I'm telling you now, if you put me against her in fire, I'm going to lose. She's going to get another notch in her belt. She's going to sit next to you and win, because not only would she play a great game, but she took out me, another big threat, and you're going to still sit next to her, and she's going to have another notch in her belt. I go, Dean's unbelievable at fire. And she goes, really? So what happened is then that next morning, once Janet got voted off, Janet's gone. She made our fire every morning. So I laid there and I go, oh, my stomach's killing me, making this all up. I go, Dean, can you make the fire this morning for the rice? And he was like, yeah, sure, Tommy, no problem. He goes, I probably should start practicing anyway. I'm like, yeah, man, like I'm going to practice later. Like, my stomach hurts. Nora gets pulled. No, she does her own yoga in the morning down by the beach. She goes for her dip. She has this like morning ritual that takes like an hour. Dean, I'm watching him, like pretending, I'm still pretending I'm sick. I'm like, yo, you're cutting your fingers. I'm like, you're supposed to hit the flint, not your fingers there, DK. So I'm like trying to help him out, like without making it obvious. He finally lights it. It took him like 45 minutes. He couldn't do it. 45 minutes, an hour. He lights it. Perfect timing. She comes back. There's a big flaming fire. So I go, Nora, can you help me wash these dishes? So we're washing the dishes and I go, do you see that fire? She goes, yeah. I go, Dean made that in 2 seconds. 2 seconds. I go, Dean, Dean never played this game. He rode everyone's coattails. He's going to be a zero vote finalist. Put him against Lauren. He's going to knock her out. He doesn't have any moves, so he's still not going to get any votes. So the fire win doesn't do anything. And then it's me versus you. And you get Lauren out. Dean's never going to win, and it's and blah, blah, blah. I go, but if you put me against her, she's going to beat me and then dominate you. Or I beat her, and then I look even better, and I'm sitting here. And then she goes, deal. I swear on everything. I'm taking you, blah, blah, blah. She wins the challenge. I'm ecstatic. We're sitting there at the final three. She does her old spiel, and when DK stands up, he goes, you just gave Tommy $1 million, and walked away. And then I'm watching Dean make fire. I'm like, dude, did you ever practice fire before? You're going on Survivor. He's like, one time. And I go, dude, oh my gosh. So I had to literally walk him step by step on how to make fire. He'll admit to it. He didn't have any clue. So I was like, all right, first you need some wood underneath for ventilation. Then you're going to put some coconut husk and build your teepee first. Then grab some more coconut husk and do big scrapings of magnesium. And put it in there. And it took him a long time. But you have hours to practice. So I kept practicing. But then I would go to Lauren. And again, I love her. But I didn't want to sit next to her because it was going to be like a Dom versus Wendell. Like, I didn't want it to be a huge fight at the final tribal. And I knew she's like emotional. And I played up that a little bit. And I would be like, Dean's killing it in fire, even though he wasn't. And she would freak out. She'd be like, I can't do this. Like, just to kind of get in her head a little bit, which is mean, but it's some, again, it's a game. Like, Lauren and I literally text. We're on good night, good morning, good night basis. Like, our significant other know we're a platonic relationship, but like, she is unbelievable. She's my best friend. But again, I didn't want to sit next to her. So, that was their plan the whole time. I helped Dean out and he takes her out in fire. So it ended up being a perfect scenario for me.
Can you talk a little bit more about the plan to have Nora go and disrupt what Lauren was working on in terms of her practice?
Oh, yeah. So one thing about Lauren, you don't mess with Lauren. Like, she's a feisty girl. She'll beat you up. So like, I was like, she's so mad at Nora because Nora told her, you're my number one, but I got to put you to fire. So I go, Nora, like, help out Lauren, but just don't tell her to make fire. Just stand around her. And she did. And you just saw this blow up happen. So, like, I was poking the Nora bear. And I was like, Nora, go talk to Lauren. Go, no, she's not that man. Like, go try to make amends again and go back to her. And I would just keep pushing Nora back because they would argue. I got to then help Dean. Sorry about the phone. I got to help Dean make fire without really Lauren knowing, kind of thing, while she was too busy yelling at Nora.
Okay. So you guys are going to ultimately have Dean beat out Lauren. You go to the final three. You get the final three breakfast. You were going to work with Nora on her speech. Can you give us anything that you gave to Nora?
So I wanted to make sure Nora, she has too big of a heart for Survivor. So I knew she loved me. She doesn't really like Dean. So I go, let's team up on Dean.
She did at that point, right?
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's walk. I think she has a crush on Dean, but didn't like him personally. I think she just thinks he's cute and just likes to stare at him. So I just try to build this as like, I've known you since day one. Let's finish this thing out on day 39 together. Like, kind of make her like, put her guard down from me, because I knew it was kind of a two-man race, me versus Dean. I just knew it, you know? So I was like, if I can get Nora just to kind of agree with the things I say against Dean, then it just looks like validation, right? So, yeah, I would definitely, like, poke at her, and she was like, can I run my speech by you? And I was like, absolutely. And you started the whole thing with the latke, I think that's what it's called. And I was like, yeah, if you bring that up, it's really good, because the more negativity brought towards Dean, the better for me. So I didn't want just the negativity to come from me attacking his game. I wanted Nora also to attack his game and not mine.
Okay. All right. The final tribal council, anything that you said that you felt like didn't make the final edit that you wish would have been in there?
Yeah, Dean even says in his one of his post games, I think it was ET Canada, like, they edited out a lot of Tommy's great things at Final Tribal. I called him the Easter Bunny, where he, like, all he did was just find trinkets, scavenger hunt, the souvenir thing. But what I really did was I walked through each and every single person on the jury and told them something I brought from the game. So it was like, Karishma, me telling you I want to go to the rodeo with you in Houston, Texas on February, it wasn't a lie. I just couldn't sit next to you. And I would go through each and every person and say, like, something, because my thing was, I knew I played a better game than both of them. No offense to them. They played great games. But it was more of, I don't want them to think I used all of them, because I kind of did. I put them all there from the beginning, from merge down, all of us kind of put them in the order and took them out. And I had a lot of final threes. So what Dean said to me was, to the jury, was, Tommy has a final three with all of you. He's not loyal, blah, blah, blah. And what I said was, I'm not loyal. I am not loyal. And you saw a little bit of it. I go, I did this for me. I did this for my family at home. All my relationships with you guys were true. And every single one of you, I truly do love. And I did promise you all final three. And I think that's my biggest move is that all of you, every single one of you, believed me when you were my number one. And when you guys would talk about me, you still believed me over all of you. So I had all of you guys taking me to the end. And that's my biggest game move. And then I really explain the big move era. And I go, what move should I have done where you all knew me, Lauren, were controlling the game, right? Lauren and I go, we put you guys in the order from merge down. The only vote I didn't have control over was the Karishma vote, because she had an idol. But Elizabeth went home anyway, who was going home next. So we just flipped that order. So guys, I put you in order from 13 down to the final three that I needed to win. You can't say I need a big move. My big move was literally controlling the game. I had it in a chokehold, and they were just like, yes, you're right. Like, I kind of knew, like, they were all just like, Team Tommy kind of thing.
Did you know if they were Team Tommy, that I guess you did know that you had this in the bag, like it wasn't even going to be a close vote?
Yes, I Dean played a great game, but like he even said, he was playing from behind, too little, too late. He talks about his fourth quarter. My final speech, they didn't air half of it, was I said, guys, I blew him out by 80 in the first three quarters, that he can't catch up in the fourth. I said, it's about making impacts of the game, and I put you all there before you put me there. I controlled the votes. I made the decisions. Dean was somebody that I grabbed at Merge and brought me in with. So they were just like, absolutely, absolutely, like just nodding their head. And that's when, that was before Dean was like, when it rains, it pours. Cause he was just like, I'm getting nowhere with the jury kind of thing. But they edited really nicely. And Dean did fight really hard. And that's my boy. And it was fun when we would attack each other. When I called myself TS Chill, and he was like, yo, that doesn't sound good. It was fun. It was like two guys playing one on one that are best friends, knowing they have to battle. But after the game, they're going to have a beer together and laugh.
Yeah, Survivor is weird. It's not like, you know, a sporting event where you're watching the play-by-play and you sort of know the score. They edit the show to make it seem like it's close no matter what. I sat there at the finale and I felt like, what? I kind of feel like any of these people could win based on the tribal council.
Yeah, 100%. And we were watching. Dean's like, yo, they're doing me good. Like, I'm loving it. So we were laughing. But I think also, I don't think the editing team knows how to edit a social game, or they don't know how to edit where, like, oh, Tommy controlled these votes down there. They just showed, oh, Tommy and Lauren are running the game. They want this idol play that saves you. But I didn't need that. I literally just put them in order and took them out with the help of everyone else. But I don't think they know how to, like, really, like, showcase that. And if they did, it's like, two, I was already a winner's edit after episode one. So, like, they didn't want to show too much of me, in my opinion. But there was also a lot of characters out there, Elaine, Lauren, Janet, that you want to tell their stories also. And, you know, it's not all about the winner. It's all about the journey of the whole season. So I'm not mad about the edit. I'm not mad about anything. I love my whole castmates. We had some good times out there, some real good players. Like, Lauren can play this game. So can Janet. So it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Tommy, I have a lot of questions for you from the patrons of Rob It's a Podcast.
Yep.
All right. Let me go completely out of season 39 for a second. Matt Gillum wants to know, who would Tommy have aligned with if he was on Winners at War? Have you thought about this? Have you done the mental exercise? Like, boy, if I was out there, yeah, what would I do?
You know what? It's funny because, like, now that, like, you're in this Survivor, what is great about Survivor is, like, you become a family so quick. Like, I met, like, 50 Survivor players. Like I just said, Michelle Fitzgerald texted me yesterday. I met Adam Klein. I met Wendell. I met all these winners, right? Chris Underwood, even though he's not on it. And after meeting them, I'm like, you realize why people win this game. Like, I fell in love with all three of them right away. Like, you get drawn into the way they talk and the way they make you feel. So instantly I knew, saying, like, wow, if I was on season 40, I would have to really, like, ramp up my game. But I think I would be in an advantage, like a benefit, because everyone knows now you make these pregame alliances, right? Boston Rob and Sandra, they just spent 39 days on a hut together. They're going to work together. Or they know Amber knows Sandra now. And all these people work, either played a season together with Sarah and Tony and stuff like that, where I feel like I come in with no one knowing who I am, that it could either work two ways. They want to vote me out right away, or kind of like Russell, where they're like, well, we all have kind of pregame alliances. Let's pull in Tommy. So I would go in there not wanting to make alliances and see where, like, my heart and gut takes me, because that's how I kind of played my season. But if I had to pick a couple, definitely the people I met, because you have a little thing where Wendell, Adam Klein, Michelle Fitzgerald, these are people I feel like I could trust, that I could work with, that showed loyalty, but also showed strategic, you know, gameplay. But I would have to say those three. But also, I got to say too, Sandra, after meeting Sandra, like, I got to spend, like, the finale week with her. Damn, you fall in love with that girl. And now I can really see why she won twice. So I would work with Sandra. I work with Boston Rob. I would want to work with Shields again, lower my threat level, be boring old Tommy, and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. But those would be the ones that I would say I would work with.
Yeah, it would be interesting as just like a thought experiment. And you wonder, you know, would Rob and Sandra, you know, vouch for you of like, hey, trust me, you know, this isn't he's a nice guy. Or would they be sort of like, hey, trust me, this guy that he knows what he's doing. Would they say to go after you?
I do think, talking to Sandra, it depends. I think they would hold it over me. Like, they would be like, Sandra would be like, look, I know you had 6 number one alliance members. I will tell everyone that and you're going to go home or work with me, kind of thing. So maybe I would have to chop their necks off right at the beginning to say like, oh, I don't have to worry about it. Because I would say I'm on Sandra's team. I'm sleeping at night thinking, what is Boston Rob telling them about season 39? What is he telling them about me? You know, stuff like that. So, but it'd also be good where people might view me and say, this guy went on an immunity run, where I could be like, Sandra knows I never had the necklace around my neck. Like, when I told about my season, I would have someone to validate it. Where if I didn't have someone to validate it, they'd be like, there's no way someone wins Survivor nowadays without an idol, without an advantage, without Island of the Idols, without an immunity necklace. He's lying to us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it would be nice to have someone to validate. Yeah, Tommy did something that someone hasn't done in 20 seasons, because it's kind of unbelievable, like not believable at this part.
Yeah, I think he'd be okay in the pre-merge, and then I feel like that. I think it'd be very similar to like when Malcolm came back and played in Survivor Karamoan, where he had just come off of Survivor Philippines. Nobody knew who he was, but he is very you know, likable guy, got along well with everybody. But then once it got to merge time, that's when people started to really look at Malcolm.
Exactly. So and again, that's what I was nervous about going on my season. But you got to find shields, you got to find ways to pit other people against each other. So it would have been fun. I would love to be out there. So I feel like this isn't going to happen ever again, but I'm hoping one day there'll be winners versus runners up or something that I can get back out there and play.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, did you know that Dean and Elaine caught Janet with the idol?
So, fun facts, again, to show how close Dean was with me. He told me that. And then he also told me he painted a fake legacy advantage. So I knew that he had a fake legacy advantage. At the spa retreat, we had a couple beers, and he goes, Tommy, I have the legacy advantage that I can play at 6. I painted a fake one. So I knew all of that. But actually, I'm wrong. I didn't know that he saw me with Janet and the idol, because he said he didn't know for a fact, but once I told him that she has an idol, then he knew what he saw was right. So that's the answer to that question.
Okay. Troy Steinmetz wants to know, which of Ron Clark's essential 69 rules were most helpful on the island?
Damn.
The 69 rules are the with the additional RHAP B&B appendix.
I have no. I would have to say, I think one of the rules is no Doritos, but is there no food? But I don't know. I really don't know. I really don't have an answer to that question.
Well,
so,
to go back to that, you said in First One Out, hey, that my hero, Ron Clark, is on the show. Yeah. One day I might have dinner with him. I might get the chance to catch up with him. Have you been able to trade notes with Ron Clark yet?
Which is great. Yeah. So Ron Clark, I think after hearing that, probably someone pitched him and say, hey, listen to Tommy's podcast. He brings you up this time. He DM'd me on Instagram and we've talked. But with Survivor being so crazy, he's invited me to his school and everything like that. So I'm definitely going to make my way down to him because it is one of my dreams. I actually want to do exactly what Ron Clark did, is open up his own school and, you know, give back to low income areas and stuff like that. So I definitely want to pitch his brain, not only on teaching style and because we have similar teaching style and stuff like that, but I also want to pitch his brain on like the business side and how to get a school up and running, how to run a nonprofit. And so he invited me down whenever I want to. So he's a super nice guy that reached out to me, which means a lot.
Okay. Let me ask you about Matthew's question. What would Tommy do if Lauren won the fire instead of Dean? What would you have said to the jury if Lauren was in? I know you said you didn't want it to be close, which I can understand why you didn't want it to be contentious. But if you had to make the case you against Lauren, what would you have said?
So it's funny. Lauren's a fantastic player, right? And that's why they want to sit next to her. She's fantastic. She was the perfect person for me. We run strategy together. She was one person I like solemnly, without anything, solely trusted. But if she was sitting at the final three, I would have attacked the jury in a way different way than I did with Dean. With Dean, I kind of knew I almost had the win. I just had to kind of show them that I love the jury, that protect my game and downplay his game a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. With Lauren, I attack. I straight up attack. I own every move. I say that's my move. And then I make the jury decide who did the better argument. If Lauren says she made a move, no, absolutely not. She's lying. It was my move, and attack that way and see her get a little bit flustered. But what would have helped me is right at the start, right? The merge boot. I would have started right from there. And I would have said, guys, Kelly was Lauren's number one except me. So whose move do you think that was? Do you think that was my move or do you think that was Kelly's move? I mean, Lauren's move. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's my move. And that move then solidified Lauren that much closer to me. Then let's go through this. Janet, who did you have a better relationship with? Dan, who did you have a better relationship with? Dean, who did you have a better relationship with? Well, not Dan, but and stuff like that. And I would have walked down. Who did you work with more, me or Lauren? I would have tried to have done that to as many people as I can. I would have really attacked Missy because I feel like Missy and Lauren had a really close bond, but I would have kind of been like, Missy, you play Division I basketball. You got to respect when someone puts you on the jury, except me. That move when there was four Lyra girls and one Voca guy, Lauren wasn't with me. You had the perfect chance to take me out. I put you there. You have to vote for me because I'm the one that took you out. You got to respect that kind of game move. So I would start at merge with the Kelly move and then say, from there on, we made moves together, but a lot of them were my decisions. And she would say the complete opposite because I've heard post-game podcasts with her where she's like, I would have won. Tommy was wrapped around my finger and stuff like that. So We really did. I got to respect her. All the moves together, right? So it's then how do you justify whose move was what? So I think the Missy vote out would have helped me a lot because I didn't have her, and her one wasn't Aaron's vote out wasn't her move, where Missy was kind of mine. And the Kelly move would have really helped me, I think. And then I think I know I would have got Dean's vote.
Is it Janet's possible? Vote. Could we have headed to another Dominic and Wendell? Could it have been 5-5?
100% it could have been 5-5. It could have been 10-0 Lauren. It could have been 10-0 me. It could have been 5-5. Like, that's something that's really fun. But I know Jamal said it in one of his things. He goes, you can't really play these. I'll get to it, though. What ifs? Because Tommy made it a point for Lauren to not sit there. He knew she wouldn't win fire. So that's another strength of my gameplay. But if she's sitting there, it would 100% could have won 5-5, which I was scared about because Nora then gives her vote. Nora gives her vote to Lauren. Yeah, 100% I would have lost. So it would be fun to see what they would do, but my final tribal speech would have been 100% different if Lauren was sitting there. So It's hard to ask the jury now, who would you have voted for? Because I didn't get to like attack Lauren's game kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Okay. Ivan has a question for you. Tommy, out of the people you met on the island, who most resembled kids you've taught before and why? Now, I don't think they mean physically.
Yeah. It's funny because actually one thing, teaching time with Tommy, I said at the end of every single confessional and I would give a lesson of the day. I would grade. I called everyone my students, everyone on my cast. So I would grade their papers. I would give them grades for the day, grade for their performances. I would talk about syllabus, rubrics. So that was like something that just didn't come up that tribal. But I literally, it's funny this question got asked because I did view them as my students. And what's one thing that helps me is students are, I have 23, all 23 are completely different from all walks of life and you have to make them feel loved, right? So that's what I did. But I would say Elaine definitely reminded me of the class clown. So we could do superlatives, right? The class clown that you love as a teacher, but then those days when you're hungry or you didn't have your coffee drive you absolutely nuts. And Lauren reminds me of the teacher's pet because she wants to be loved by everybody. She's smiley, giggly. I feel like she'd give me an apple every morning. And then Jason is the kid that sits in the back of the room, pretends he's not so smart, but gets 100 on everything, but then tries to be a little tough and stuff like that. But so those are the three I would say definitely remind me of kids in my classroom.
Yeah, that's interesting that in terms of the approach that you have to take as a teacher, that, you know, that there is not one just teaching style for every student in the class and how that applies to Survivor.
Yeah, because think of it, as a teacher, you can't only benefit some students and throw away the others. All 23, I have to give them the best education as possible. I have some kids with special needs. I have some kids with learning disabilities. I have kids with speech. I have kids that our second language is English. And I have to find the best way to teach those students. So I individualize the education program for each and every one of my students. And that's kind of what I did in the game. I pitched to each and every single player what was best for their game and for my game together. So I would change my approach to each and every single person.
Okay. This is a question from Shimon, who says, after watching the season, which winner do you think you played the most like? Is there a person that you would say that your game was closest to?
Tina. No, I'm just kidding. My game was closest to, it's crazy because in 20 seasons, there hasn't been a winner without an advantage, an idol, or an immunity necklace. And that was Natalie White. But Natalie White didn't win the same fashion I did. I kind of controlled the game with the help of others. Mm-hmm. I would have to say, I think kind of like a Wendell type win, even though his was really close because Dom was such a good player. But like the way he did little things like bring the seashell to Sebastian, like mm-hmm. little things like that can win you the game. And I did those little things, which I know Dom and I, because he lives in Long Island, we talk all the time. And he was like, you don't realize on television all these little things that win you Survivor. And it's not just gameplay. It's how do you make people feel? What do you do that's above and beyond for them? And so I would think a little bit of that.
I had said that I thought maybe like Todd. What do you think of that?
Oh, I'll take Todd, man. I think Todd is an absolute game changer. I think he's one of the best players of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love Todd. Survivor China is one of my favorite seasons. Todd played an awesome game. I will definitely take that as a huge compliment.
Okay. Let me ask you a question from Andy, who says, your win is notable in that you were vulnerable at every tribal council you attended, including the final four, when even then you weren't the target. What was it about your social game that made that possible? What arguments did you use to get the other players to feel secure, taking you each step further in the game?
I think I hit on this before where I promised everyone the final three, right? But it wasn't just an empty promise. I would pitch to them why I would sit next to them and not the other people. And I would go then to Lauren and say, look, it's so dumb for me to sit next to Dean and Janet. And I would do that to everybody. And like Nora said in your podcast just yesterday or whenever you posted it, was I was the golden retriever that everyone loved to tell everything to. I was the sweetheart fourth grade teacher, you know, that was open and honest with everybody. So my strategy was just be that soundboard for everybody, right?
I love soundboards.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't play me having night terrors. And every single night, what I would do is go through each person and think of two things. Did I talk strategy with them? And did I talk about their life at home? And I would go and say, Dan, did I talk about his family life? And did I talk strategy? Yes and yes. Great. Lauren, did I talk about family life, emotional things, things that aren't game related and strategy? Yes. Okay. Nora, did I talk about her home? Did I talk strategy? No, I didn't talk strategy. So tomorrow she's going to be the first person I talk strategy with. And I made sure to talk that one-on-one with everybody every day.
Where did you get the idea to do that?
I don't know. I remember just hearing podcast after podcast of what worked and what didn't work. But I realized people aren't going to talk strategy with you if they don't like you. There's times where you're going to work with someone that you don't like, but that's not going to last the whole game, right? Mm-hmm. Why did Dom and Wendell go the whole game? Because they love each other. And it's still obvious because at the Christmas party I just went to in the city, Dom gave him a Christmas present of an ornament of themselves. So they loved each other. And that means they can work longevity together, right? So I made sure, I was like, I want everyone to love me, to feel comfortable with me. Back to teaching, right? Every SID needs to feel, hey, Mr. Sheehan, like, I didn't eat breakfast this morning. All right, let me get you something. I need people, the shyest kid in the room to the loudest kid in the room, to be able to come up to me and open up and be vulnerable.
Were you keenly or acutely aware when people were asking you about your life at home?
Oh, 100%. I was so aware of everything I said. What was nice about me, I didn't have to lie about my job, right? And I feel like once you say fourth grade teacher, it's disarming. If I said personal trainer, if I said businessman, it's always like, but what does he do? You know what I mean? As a fourth grade teacher, everyone kind of is like, aw, like that's the first thing that everyone says, right? But also I viewed it as, I was thinking of lying about it maybe, because then people don't want to sit next to a fourth grade teacher at the end, right? So that's the one thing that scared me. But I said, that's a long game thing that I don't want to, because once you start lying about your home life, then you're going to get caught in lies and that can ruin your game. So I said, I want to disarm myself as much as I can. And I think me telling my job was a great way to disarm me early in the game.
So what I'm trying to get at is that when you're getting asked questions about your home life, or when you like, are you realizing when people are using, well, OK, well, this is what I'm doing to get people to like me. So now this person is asking me questions about myself. So it's like, I see you. All right. Now you're a target because you're asking me too many questions.
100%. 1000%. I think that's one of my strongest game assets too, that you can't, again, show in an edit. I would know when someone's fake and when someone's not. Janet and me would talk every day about home life. Then say Missy comes up to me and is like, hey, Tommy, like, let's talk about your students. I'm like, whoa, you never asked about them for 12 days and now you're asking about it. Why? What's going on? Why are you asking me this now? So it depends on the person and the way they ask the question, because again, I know as a teacher, you have students lie. You have to know when they're lying, when what's different, or when their handwriting's different. Oh, why did they have, so you have to pick up on the littlest cues of eye contact, of the way they're speaking. Are they speaking slow? Are they speaking fast? Why are they looking around when they're talking to me? Why did we have to go all the way to the water well to talk? Why can't we just talk in front of people if it's just about family stuff? So, or most of the time, family stuff would go right into strategy. And I'm like, oh, so that was your segue into let's talk strategy. So like I would pick up on those things very, very easily, actually.
OK. Amanda Danforth says, fellow teacher here, can you ask him about how he was told everybody that he was leaving? What did they think he was doing? I always wanted to apply for Survivor, but I don't know if my administration would take it. There haven't been that many educators on Survivor. I can only think of two. And I've assumed it's because of this challenge. So what did you tell the school?
It's funny, when I was in the casting process, I went on my fiance's Twitter and I asked Brendan Shapiro, and he clearly doesn't know it's me. I said, how did you get out of school? And he was like, my school is just supportive of it. It's a G-rated show. It's a school that they can get behind. It's something that can build the culture. So I said, all right, that's my avenue. So I went to my principal. I said, I have this opportunity. And she goes, OK, well, you have to talk to the superintendent, the person that runs the whole entire district. Right. So I sat down with him and I go, hey, you probably never heard this before. He's like, I've heard everything. I go, have you ever seen the show Survivor? And he goes, I love Survivor. And I was like, yes. And I pitched it to him and he goes, here's the deal. I can't say no to this because I will regret it for the rest of my life that I took an opportunity to like this away from somebody. So he goes, go out there. But if you come in last place, your job will not be here when you get back. He goes, if you come in 19th, yeah. So once we won that first challenge, I was like, all right, at least I got my job back. But he was a super fan. I think you could take it two ways in a school district. They can be like, we don't want someone on reality television. And I made sure to say, like, luckily he was a fan, so he understood. It's not The Bachelor. It's not, you know, even Big Brother. You know what I mean? So I was like, it's a show. The school can take it. No, you're not going. It's reality television. Or yes, you're going. The school can get so behind this, which my school did. They made Team Sheehan shirts. There was banners all over the school. The bulletin boards were all Survivor themed. So it was an awesome, like, culture, bring the school together, opportunity. So you just got to be honest with them. And, but I was also willing to, quit if I needed to be.
Okay. Patrick Riley wants to know, I'm curious to know if Tommy plans to continue teaching now that he's won his fortune. Has he thought about what he wants to do with his life now? So I know that you are still continuing to teach. Was there any consideration about stepping away?
Rob, you lived on Long Island, right?
I have.
So that $500,000 after taxes, that can buy you barely a house. So I obviously need a job back, but I've said this in an interview with CBS that if the prize money was $100 million, I'm not someone that can just sit around all day. And I love, it's as cheesy as it sounds, I absolutely love my job. So no matter what money, if I hit the multi-million lotto, I was going back to teach. I love teaching. I love my students. It's something that's so fun for me that no matter what money, I was coming back and teaching the next day.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, how did you handle being called boring by people so well, asking for some Big Brother players?
That's awesome. It's funny because the amount of people that would be like, Tommy, you are the least boring person in the world, or even my cast, they're like, probably it goes Elaine than you as the craziest people on our cast. They go, it's so funny to hear that you're boring. So they just rip me to shreds. So like Jason, he'll just call me Mr. Boring. My friends are like, oh, Tommy's boring. Do we even want to invite him out tonight? So everyone that knows me knows I'm not boring, but also I don't care. Like, again, like at the beginning, I was like, wow, that's weird. But then it was just something that I laugh at. It was funny. I don't care. My paycheck didn't bounce. I went out there to play a game for me, not for other people. I went out and had a great time. I made amazing friends. I won $1 million. I won Soul Survivor. Boring. I don't care. But everything else was amazing. So it really, really doesn't bother me.
Well, let me just ask you about how it ended up being perceived this way. Do you feel like that, hey, I went out there and I had to hold back my personality because I consciously did not want to let my personality shine out there because that was part of my strategy? Or do you feel like, hey, I was being a big personality out there, but for whatever reason, they just didn't show my big personality moments in the episodes?
Yeah. So there's two folds to this. In confessionals, I was very careful of what I said, because again, I teach 9-year-olds. I care about what they view of me, right? I don't care about being boring. So in confessionals, I was very, very careful of what I said. When I played, I had a blast. I was very funny. I did a donut dance. I had a love show. I was the host, and I would try to set up Nora with Jamal and then Dean. There was a lot of funny moments of me that didn't air because there's just not enough time, right? Mm-hmm. But again, I will never forget, after the love show I did with Jamal and Nora, I had the entire place like peeing themselves laughing. That was my worst night of sleep because I said, tomorrow you cannot make anyone laugh. That was so stupid of you, Tommy. You have to be more in check with how you make people feel. You don't want to be Elaine. You can't be too likable because likability is a liability. Stop making people laugh. So there were so many times in the game where I wanted to be my true personality and say a joke or do this, and I would just check myself and say, don't say anything, because one, I knew I was liked, and that if I made Final Tribal, everyone on the jury liked me personally, but I didn't want to be over the top likable or funny because I was already a good social player. I don't need that likability on top of that, or I'd get voted off. So it was another thing of lowering my threat level to make sure my personality didn't shine full through.
Tommy, is there anything else about Survivor season 39 or beyond that you want to make sure people know?
No. And also, I love answering questions. So if you have any questions, DM me or anything like that. I love this stuff. I hope I can come on and do a podcast on all winners from a winner's perspective.
Yeah. Right?
Of course. So I love this stuff. I've been on Survivor Reddit. I've listened to all your stuff.
Wait, you've been on Survivor Reddit?
Yeah, I used to be on it all the time. So yeah, you're just messing with me now.
Well, you just, so, you seem like you really, you know, are very, very conscious of like, you know, what people are saying. I'm sure it must be hard because you went out there, you had this experience of the lifetime. And then, of course, you know, there's the whole everything with the controversy this season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of people are unhappy because, hey, 5 men in a row have won. We didn't want another man to win. And that's not your fault. What are you supposed to do? Not win?
That's funny, too. I literally, my fiance gets mad because she's on Reddit, too. And she's a super fan. And she goes, so because you're a male and because you're a white male, should you have just not tried? Should you have just gave the game away?
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, you were going to be the worst. And she was like, you played a phenomenal game. I wish people would respect it. I was like, kind of like slowing her roll down a little bit, but yeah. I do love, like, I saw like Teaching Time with Tommy, and then like I just saw like Training Time with Tommy, Terrific Time with Tommy, Tanning Time with Tommy. Oh wait, he can't tan. Like, that stuff cracks me up. There was one that was like the ride in Disney World, Tower of Terror with Tommy, and they photoshopped me and all 20 people. Mm-hmm. That stuff has me dying. So that's why I keep going on Reddit. I love seeing those stuff. So keep them coming. No, yeah, that's awesome.
But in terms of, and I talked about this with Nora a little bit in my conversation with her, of that you guys don't know what happened in season 38. For all you know, a woman could have won season 38, and they don't tell you, like, even if you ask, like, hey, who wins the Edge of Extinction? They don't tell you that stuff.
No, I actually tried so hard to find out, because I wanted to beat Ron Clark so bad. Mm-hmm. Because I want to say I was the best teacher to ever play, kind of thing. And like kind of like mess with him, rub it in my face. And I would ask like every day. And they were like, can't tell you, can't tell you, can't tell you. So they literally can't even budge on like anything. And I would be like, yo, I'm in the final three. Can you just tell me now? And they're like, you'll find out like after final three, I'll tell you. And I was like, okay, cool. So yeah, you don't know. You also don't know that Chris Underwood gave up his necklace for fire or came back from Edge of Extinction and won.
Right.
So you don't know any of that. So again, though, that stuff doesn't bother me at all. Like, it's me. I went out there to play and win, and I did that. So whatever. Like, tough luck to everyone else.
Okay. Tommy, well, thank you for going through all this with us and talking about your game. You know, I can tell how much you love the game, you know, how excited you are to, you know, to get to talk about this experience. And it's, you know, you seem like you're, you know, a really fun guy.
Oh, Rob, now I can sleep at night since you didn't say I was a boring podcast. So but no, really, thank you for having me on anytime. It's been fun.
Yeah. Podcasting is the opposite of being on Survivor. I have, you know, a boring podcast, and then I'm like, oh, I can't sleep at night. you know, what am I going to do? People are going to unsubscribe.
Oh, true, true, true. And that's your livelihood. You know, Survivor, it's just, they'll forget about me come, what, February 10th?
February 12th is the premiere. And no, I think it's going to be really fun to hear from you and from all the winners who aren't out there during the Winners at War season.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to watch that unravel, because there's some hella good players out there. So it's going to be fun.
Okay. Anything you want to tell people to check out? Of course, you're on Twitter at TommySheehan22.
Mostly on Instagram. I don't really go on Twitter. So ThomasTheTrain227, if you want to ask. That's where I usually respond to like DMs and stuff like that.
Wait, what's that? That's your Reddit handle?
No, not my Reddit.
What is that? So it's Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram, ThomasTheTrain227. I'm still in hiding on my Reddit, so okay. I will.
What's the 227?
So 22 is my grandpa when he played basketball and stuff. He was 22. My dad was number 22. So I was number 22 growing up. And then they just didn't have, for some reason, ThomasTheTrain22. So I just added a 7, and I have no idea why. So don't ask me about the 7, but they didn't have ThomasTheTrain22. Who doesn't have ThomasTheTrain22?
Is that your nickname, Thomas the Train?
No. Never been called that in my life. I don't know why I did that. These are tougher questions than my game questions.
So you just adopted the name of the children's television show.
Yeah, I'm self-proclaimed until Elaine gave me like seven nicknames. So actually, no one's asked me that, and I've never even like thought of that, actually. So, Rob, you blew my mind with that.
I see you tweeted about the Circle. Are you into the Circle?
Love the Circle. Well, I don't know if I love or hate the Circle. It's definitely a weird concept. I love Survivor because the social interaction in person. You can read people's like hand motions and the way they look at you. This is like so different, mm-hmm. but I love it. And the people I'm rooting for right now is Shuby. Yeah. And then Joey, just you're from Long Island. He's the typical guy from Long Island.
Chester, but yeah, he would fit right in.
Exactly. I live in Long Beach. You know how many people like that I see in the bars? So he just he holds his own. I think he's hysterical.
Yeah. Is that DK Chillin's catchphrase? Is that one of them?
Oh, yeah, that's all he says. Well, he's usually chilling, so he doesn't speak much. But when he does, that's he just yells, "Yeah, buddy," at the top of his
voice. But it's interesting to talk about the Circle in terms of your Survivor game, because I think that in terms of like the Circle is a lot about, hey, this is how people are viewing me. And then, you know, what can I say to sort of downplay my threat level in terms of whether people are sort of like catfishing or sort of you know, posting different pictures online because they want to, you know, change the perception that people have of their persona.
And here's, yeah, exactly. But it's so hard to do that over text because, like, Nora in your podcast said, like, you can't read someone's text message. Like, you don't know if they're happy or sad or you're mm-hmm. mad, you know. But one thing I don't get about this game, why do they care? Like,
oh, hold on. We have to do a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert before. Okay. Tommy's going to say something.
Sorry. Why do they care so much about, like, who's catfishing? Who's this? Like, I don't care if you're a catfish if you're going to work with me.
Yeah, we actually talked about this a little bit on the recap that we did. We did a Circle week one roundtable. If you want to subscribe to our Circle podcast, robiswebsite.com/CirclePodcast. But yeah, it is a good question because you're not just trying to figure out. It's not like the mole of, hey, I found the person who's the catfish, so now I won the game. But I asked that question to the panel, and so the answer I got back was basically that, you know, the whole idea of a catfish is somebody who is being disingenuous. So if you kind of figure out who the catfish people are, then I guess you also can say that then I cannot trust the other information. I mean, not necessarily that you can trust what somebody who's telling you who isn't a catfish. But if you sort of,
gotcha.
I guess it would be sort of like the same as if on Survivor, you found out that somebody was lying about their job. It's like, aha. All right. Yeah. So now, all right. So I know that you're not even really a professional skateboarder like you told us. You're actually, I don't know why that would be a good fake job. But now we know that we can't trust you because you're lying.
True. What else are you going to lie about, kind of thing?
Yeah. So I think that's the idea.
And I think it just depends on the person, because Jason from day one, I was like, dude, I know that's not your job, but like, I still work with him. I didn't care. Like, to me, I don't care if you're a cop. I don't care if you're a detective, but I get that in this aspect because it's like, you don't get to meet them. So if they're lying about their pictures, what else? They're completely lying about their name. So what else are they going to lie about, kind of thing? So
yeah,
I get that.
Okay. All right. Well, Tommy, very fun to get to catch up. Good luck back at school, back with the students after a long holiday break. Parents appreciate you getting back on the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Wish me luck. They're going to be animals when they get back. So, but it'll be fun. I'm excited to see them all.
Okay. All right, Tommy, thank you so much. Of course, we've got plenty more going on with our lead up to season 40. Of course, lots of talk about the Circle and everything that's going on right now in our patron Facebook group at robhasawebsite.com/patron, our patron podcast feed, and much more. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you again for listening to us. We've got a lot more coming up next week where we're going to kick off our season 40 previews and much more with The Circle coming up right now in January on robhasawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.